Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
And names that we mentioned, so if you missed something, you can go back there and find it. Leave a comment if you still don't have your information that you need, and we'll get it to you. Thanks for giving me part of your day, and remember, we change tomorrow by changing today, and we have to, because tomorrow really matters. Stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show, coming up next after the CBS News.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Barack Obama feeling the breath of history in Germany.
People of Berlin, people of the world, this is our moment. This is our time.
He called himself a citizen of the world.
We are a people of improbable hope, with an eye towards the future, with resolve in our heart. Let us remember this history and answer our destiny and remake the world once again. Thank you, Berlin. God bless you.
Before his speech, before an estimated 200,000 people, Obama met with the German chancellor, all of it designed to present himself as ready to be president of the most powerful nation on the planet. It was not, as Crandall Canyon coal mine owner Robert Murray assured us, an earthquake that collapsed his mine and killed 9 men 11 months ago in Utah. Mine safety chief Richard Stickler says it was bad mine design did it in.
It was a catastrophic outburst of the coal pillars that were used to support the ground above the coal seam.
And the government is fining the company $1.6 million. In New Hampshire, a swath through the middle of the state sure looks like tornado damage, though that's not yet confirmed, says Governor John Lynch.
It's pretty widespread. I've just finished a tour from Epsom all the way to New Durham. It appears like at least 100 homes have been damaged. A number of homes have collapsed completely. A number of roads are closed.
One person died. Thousands of people are without electricity. In Texas, from Brownsville to Laredo, the order of the day has been cleanup. Dolly is just a depression now with winds around 35 miles an hour. The wide weather system is still capable of generating some dangerous weather, however.
When you have a restaurant that has half of its roof blown off and power lines that are down and debris up and down the railroad tracks, I would say that was pretty bad and pretty substantial.
That's reporter Daniel Farias on the south side of San Antonio. A bill failed today on Capitol Hill dealing with ways to get more oil on the market.
I'm Mark Knoller at the White House, which made it clear the Democrats' oil bill was a non-starter. Press Secretary Dana Perino said the Strategic Petroleum Reserve was set up for national emergencies.
We don't think it should be rated for purposes that were to try to manipulate price.
She made it clear the president would veto the measure, but its defeat in the House saved Mr. Bush the trouble.
CBS's Bob Fuss says Democratic leaders knew the bill wouldn't pass anyway because they used a special rule to require a two-thirds vote. That way they could avoid having to take a vote on offshore drilling. Wall Street, the Dow fell 283 points. NASDAQ lost nearly 46. CBS's Alexis Christophorus.
What really threw the market for a loop, though, was a report that showed home resales fell to the lowest level in 10 years.
Oil prices up $1.23 to $125.67 a barrel today. This is CBS News.
You spend your meals overchewing your food. That unhealthy obsession with seals is troubling your boss. And each night, you circle your living room waiting for its return. Well, grab your Chum Bucket, shark fans. Shark Week is back. With 7 nights of the biggest, baddest, most shark-infested special episodes you've ever seen. Let the frenzy begin, my friends. Shark Week is back, starting this Sunday at 9 on the Discovery Channel.
It's time to get more for less. Because right now at the Home Depot end of season clearance event, you can save 25% or more on select items throughout the store. Everything from cordless power tools, hand tools, wet dry vacs, and more. All from your favorite brands like Ridgid, Ryobi, and DeWalt. Just look for the yellow tags and save. At the Home Depot end of season clearance event, the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid in U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details.
No Child Left Behind required testing, and that testing is telling a powerful new story about what girls can do in math.
Researchers looked at test results for some 7 million students, at scores for the most gifted kids, at ability to solve complex problems.
Girls really are at parity with boys in math performance all the way through the end of high school.
University of Wisconsin researcher Janet Hyde, lead author of this study in the journal Science, hopes this finding will spark an attitude shift.
Even today, parents and teachers continue to stereotype and believe that boys are better than girls at math.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
At Bromma Airport in Stockholm, Sweden, the workers at the ticket counter were shocked when a dwarf hopped out of one of the suitcases. Eyes wide, mouths agape, undercover, TV cameras rolling for a comedy show. Police say the airport staff considered, then decided not to bring any charges, whatever they might have been. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Now you can share your color inspiration at colorofinspiration.com, the new online community from Sherwin-Williams, where you can post photos, chat about what inspires you, maybe even inspire someone else. Once you've found your colorful inspiration, save $7 a gallon on a wide variety of our exceptional paints and stains for incredible inspiration and great savings. At Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit sherwinwilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
It's time to get more for less. Because right now at the Home Depot End of Season Clearance event, you can save 25% or more on select items throughout the store. Everything from cordless power tools, hand tools, wet dry vacs, and more. All from your favorite brands, like Ridgid, Ryobi, and DeWalt. Just look for the yellow tags and save. At the Home Depot End of Season Clearance event, the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid in U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm delighted you're listening. In the second half of this hour, Bruce Fine will join us. He is a Republican, a prominent Republican, who supports impeachment of Bush. But first, I'm delighted to talk with Congresswoman Maxine Waters, the Democrat from Los Angeles, a true progressive in the House of Representatives and pushing the Democratic caucus in that direction as well. Maxine Waters, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. Congresswoman, do I have you? Well, we lost the Congresswoman. Joshua, you want to see if we can track her down and get her back on the line? I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but we lost Maxine Waters. She is a Democrat from Los Angeles, and she sits on the House Judiciary Committee. And this is a very important week. And if your source of news is the television networks or even a major newspaper, you might be unaware that on Friday morning in Washington, the Judiciary Committee will convene not to hear quite a bill of impeachment. It is billed as a hearing on the imperial presidency. And if you listened to our program earlier in the week, and if you weren't able to, grab a podcast. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com. On Wednesday, we spoke with Dennis Kucinich, the author of the bill of impeachment. And it appears that he's going to have to carefully navigate the rules of the House, because since Conyers, the chair of the committee, has not designated this as a pure impeachment hearing, as explicitly an impeachment hearing, the rules of the House may prevent even Dennis Kucinich from saying something explicit like, "I believe the president lied about the intelligence related to Iraq, its connection to 9/11, the WMD, etc." And so this could be a very brief hearing, or it could open up into something unexpected and something that I would be delighted to see. Congresswoman Maxine Waters has reconnected with us. We'll get her back on the line here in just a moment. And for our weekend listeners on Green 960 in San Francisco, KPOJ in Portland, and KPTK in Seattle, I just want to let you know that the conversation you're hearing was originally broadcast on Thursday, the day before the hearings. And so as you're hearing this on Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening, events may have already transpired. And so just keep that in mind, because I do understand with a delayed broadcast that you could get a little confused about what we're talking about and when. But the hearing is Friday morning, July 25th. It starts at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And we've learned that it will be broadcast on C-SPAN 3. So C-SPAN 3 is where you can find it, and it quite possibly might be replayed either on Friday or over the weekend. So it's something that I strongly support, and I'd like to see this go beyond being a one-day hearing where pleasantries are exchanged, but we really don't get down to the business of holding the Bush administration accountable. So that's very important to me. And we have Congresswoman Waters back on the line. Congresswoman, thanks for joining us today.
Well, you're certainly welcome.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
I'm glad to be on.
And before we talk about the imperial presidency, there's a little good news coming out of the House and the Senate, and that is this housing bill that the president had threatened to veto, and he's withdrawn that veto.
Yes.
It's going to provide funding to help refinance about 400,000 troubled homeowners in our country. That's a start. There are only a million others who are facing foreclosure this year, but I do understand we have to start somewhere. And there's also almost $4 billion. This is what the president didn't like.
Yes.
These are block grants for local governments so that these neighborhoods that are blighted with a lot of vacant foreclosed properties can be maintained so that the whole neighborhood doesn't go down the drain.
You got it. You absolutely have it right. Yes, we're going to have about 400,000. We're going to strengthen the FHA, that's the Federal Housing Administration. They will be in position to refinance many of these homes that are at risk for foreclosure. People have gotten notices. The resets are about to come into being, and now they can get some help.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have them. They have to mark the houses down 85% of value because, you know, houses have lost value.
Right.
And then they will be in position to get refinancing from FHA. But the $4 billion is the real kicker in all of this, because you're right. The president did not want that, threatened to veto. It was a big issue for me. I've traveled all over this country. I've held hearings. I've seen the devastation to neighborhoods. And when you have houses that are foreclosed on, boarded up, they're being stripped of their copper. In some neighborhoods, criminals are moving in.
Mm-hmm.
Fires are being set. The police and fire are being overtaxed in trying to maintain these properties. And cities are using their general fund money and CDBG money to try and maintain them. So I and Senator Dodd worked very hard to get monies in for the city so that they could purchase these properties, rehab them, put them back on the market to low and moderate income, not only for sale but for rent also.
Mm-hmm.
Because many of the people who have lost their homes won't be buying anything soon, but they should have a decent, safe place to live.
Well, and Congresswoman, there are a lot of renters who are in a limbo spot right now because the the investors who owned their homes have given them up to the bank, and the renters are sitting there just waiting for the other shoe to drop. But because the banks are so backlogged with short sales and foreclosures, a lot of these renters are just left dangling.
Well, we're going to be able to move these properties with both of these parts of the legislation. This legislation is one of the best things that's happened, not only in the 110th Congress, but maybe for many years now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is comprehensive. And, yes, we do supply potential support for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. They are big. If they go down, it will send the kind of tremor and disruption through this economy that will be unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
They hold about $6 trillion in debt, and they have the second mortgages on about 50% of all the home mortgages in the country. So they're huge. And so they wanted us to put in some safeguard language that in case they needed to borrow money or have us invest money, that it could be done. And so we basically said to the president, that this $4 billion has to stay in for the communities and the cities and the neighborhoods, and that's what got it, got the veto lifted from it.
And Maxine Waters, I'm a little uncomfortable with this just open-ended commitment to Freddie and Fannie. At the same time, I do understand that what they're trying to do is essentially put in a retaining wall here or a floor and say, look, we've got to reappraise homes in the United States, but we don't want it to fall below a certain level. The risk is that we may have acted before the bottom, and that could further complicate things, couldn't it?
Well, I don't think so. Now, Fannie and Freddie are in potential trouble, but they have lots of equity. I mean, they're not insolvent at all. We have also put in the language for a new, strong regulator to pay attention just to Fannie and Freddie, to look at everything about the portfolio that they hold, to what kind of risks they're involved with, to how they do everything. So we have reform built into the bill. They can't pay out any dividends when they make money. We're first in line if we give any loans or if we do investment. We get our money back for the taxpayers. Mm-hmm. Now, this is kind of a stopgap measure to make sure that we don't have the disruption in the economy. But this is short term. This is not something that will be the fix for Fannie Mae for the long term. We've got to take a deep look at Fannie and decide whether or not it should have the guarantee of the federal government, or whether or not it should just be a private agency going out, getting that capital, and having the same kind of mission to help provide housing opportunities. So we're reevaluating, looking at, giving oversight to, not just putting up dollars.
Mm-hmm. Maxine Waters is with us, Democrat from Los Angeles, and I just want to give credit to Chris Dodd in the Senate and Barney Frank in the House for pushing this through against the veto threat from the White House and many other obstructions thrown up by the Republicans.
You're absolutely correct.
Congresswoman, we have declared this on my program Impeachment Week. I support the bill of impeachment, the article of impeachment presented by Congressman Kucinich. And it's kind of bizarre because as it's shaping up for Friday morning, this hearing, which is billed on about an investigation of the imperial presidency, is not technically an impeachment hearing.
No, it's not.
And therefore, if Dennis Kucinich or Bruce Fein or anyone else who testifies says, I believe the president committed a crime, is that not a violation of the debate rules in the House? And won't Danny Boy Lundgren object and say, I want this hearing to stop right away?
Yes, you're absolutely correct. It's being billed as a full committee hearing on executive power and its constitutional limitations. We do these all the time. Dennis Kucinich will be there serving on one of the panels to testify. We'll have a Republican like Walter Jones.
Mm-hmm.
That will be testifying. So we'll have a kind of a bipartisan effort here, and we have some outside people like Liz Holtzman.
Right. She was on our program earlier this week.
And some others. Excuse me, I'm about to lose my voice. One
okay.
moment.
That's Congresswoman Maxine Waters coughing a little bit.
So we will proceed with examining the executive power as we have done in some other committee hearings.
But, I certainly understand. Have a little water there. I'll tell you what, Congresswoman, let's take our break right now, and we'll come back and talk about this a little further. Maxine Waters is my guest here on the Peter B. Collins Show, Democrat from Los Angeles, and we're talking about Friday's hearing in the Judiciary Committee before Chairman Conyers about the imperial presidency. If you'd like to call in, lines are open right now on our live broadcast at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last.
Hello, I'm Barbara Mossberg. You know you move too fast. And I'm inviting you to join me Sundays to slow down for our poetry hour. Here's the lowdown on our poetry hoedown. Meet me at high noon, and we'll make the morning last right here on KRXA 540.
What you know when I've come to work.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Do you love KRXA 540? Show your support for our radio station by placing a bumper sticker on the bumper of your vehicle. Click on the bumper sticker at KRXA540.com and think for yourself.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
The Peter B. Collins Show.
We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job 'cause of his dad, now we're all in danger.
All right, what are you gonna do about it? The Constitution calls for impeachment when crimes are committed by high elected officials, including violations of their oaths of office. And we're talking with Congresswoman Maxine Waters. She is a Democratic member of the House Judiciary Committee. And as we're speaking here on Thursday, we are talking about Friday's scheduled hearing at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. That's 7 a.m. Pacific Time. It'll be broadcast on C-SPAN 3. And this is billed as not an impeachment hearing, but a look at the imperial presidency of George W. Bush. And Congresswoman, I'm one of those people who believes that we need full accountability, and before we can get there, we need full disclosure. And that's what the impeachment process is intended to do. How do we get from where we are with this severely restrained hearing to a full investigation of the misdeeds of the Bush administration under the constitutional impeachment provisions? Congresswoman?
Can you hear me?
Oh, now I've got you. I'm sorry. That was my mistake.
I really wish we could get there. You're absolutely right. This full committee hearing is on the executive power and its constitutional limitations. As you know, there was resistance by our leadership to having impeachment hearings on George W. Bush. When we took over with the majority in the House, our leadership decided that we had to get some things done for the people. We had to increase the minimum wage. We had to do something about the interest rates on college loans. We had to do something about housing, all of these things. And they felt that all of our time would be taken up if we got caught up in the impeachment process. And this president has got to be going soon. So they felt it was best to try to have some real accomplishments and get situated so that we can be in place for the next president, a majority in the House, a majority in the Senate, and try and turn this country around and correct some of the bad things that have happened under the president. So this is about the best we're going to get prior to George Bush leaving office, is an examination of some of the things that he's been doing with his executive power, the kind of abuses that he has been involved with. I think it's good that we should do this. This committee has been doing these kinds of hearings relative to abuse of power, not only, you know, in the executive office, but certainly in branches of the executive office. So we'll proceed with this, and hopefully a lot of information will come out, will be shared, but I don't think that it's going to get us to impeachment.
And, Congresswoman, is there any parliamentary maneuver or a motion that you could use in the committee to shift this the whole focus of it from a hearing on the imperial presidency to a hearing on Denis Kucinich's article of impeachment? That's what I want. And I'll add that it's not important to me that it go full term and that we try to remove the president from office. I want disclosure and accountability, and that's what the first stages of impeachment can supply.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. No, I don't know that there is at this point. I will be in between two committees. We have all of the servicers in the financial industry that's supposed to be doing the workouts and the modifications on loans that they have not been doing. So I'll be running between financial services and judiciary. If I see any opportunities, I won't be shy about taking them now.
Well, you've got my full-throated support, Maxine Waters.
Okay.
Go for it.
Okay. Now, I have to tell you, I've got 7 minutes left to do the vote, maybe another minute and a half.
A minute and a half is perfect. Yes. I want to turn to the last time we talked to you very politely. You know, we're talking about your support for Senator Clinton, and
yes,
I offered a few ideas, and you thanked me for my thoughts. I wanted to know if you have endorsed Senator Obama, and what your comments are about some of the rearguard Hillary supporters. I characterize their position as give me Hillary or give me death.
Well, I have endorsed
Obama.
Barack Obama. I have endorsed him, and I have great respect for Hillary Clinton, and I've been trying to examine the pain that women are feeling who feel so strongly about Hillary. And while I know that when they compare McCain with Barack Obama, that they cannot be comfortable with McCain, and I think they're going to come around. But what I think I discovered was women who, many of these women were not in the feminist movement when we started this some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
These, many of the women in our suburbs and in our towns raised their children, took care of the house, were dutiful wives, and now many of them are alone. The husbands are gone. Sometimes with younger women,
mm-hmm,
and they have an empty nest. The children are gone. They've graduated, and they didn't pursue some of their dreams. They've watched Hillary work hard. They feel some of her pain about some of what she's had to suffer. And you know what? They bought in, and they got angry, and they got very supportive. And they've got to be worked with, and they've got to be dealt with, and they've got to know that there's going to be some real opportunities for women who are coming behind them. And I think that can be done.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll see you in Denver at the convention, Congresswoman.
Okay. Looking forward to talking with you there.
Thank you very much. Maxine
right.
Waters from Los Angeles. She always calls it the way she sees it, and I appreciate that. We're going to take a break and return Bruce Fine, a prominent Republican who supports impeachment of George W. Bush. He'll join me next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood Files, sponsored in part by Franklin Templeton Investments. Their unique perspective helps them see domestic and international markets in a different light. Franklin Templeton Investments gain from their perspective. I'm Charles Osgood. It's not surprising that among the homeless in this country are military veterans. What is surprising is this.
Veterans make up a disproportionate share of homeless people. They represent roughly 26% of homeless people, but only 11% of the adult population.
More after this.
Why should you consider investing in gold today? Well, number one, it's simply a smart strategy. Many experts believe that adding gold to your portfolio may improve its performance. In fact, it's proven to give investors a 4-to-1 return over stocks the last 3 years alone. Number two, it's guaranteed. When you buy a stock, it's paper that can be worth $100 a share today and nothing tomorrow. When you invest in gold American Eagles, you get the only gold coins whose weight, content, and purity are guaranteed by the U.S. government. And when you have Blanchard & Company on your side, you get a double guarantee because they guarantee to buy back your gold anytime you want to sell. So if you want proven performance and an asset that has been in demand for 3,000 years, call Blanchard & Company. They have a very special radio offer on gold American Eagles right now. So call 888-730-GOLD. That's 888-730-GOLD. Don't wait. Call 888-730-GOLD.
Homelessness statistics are difficult to pin down, since by definition, homeless people don't have a fixed address. You won't find them in the phone book. You can't go around knocking on doors to find them, since homeless people don't have doors to knock on. But the nonprofit National Alliance to End Homelessness arrived at its numbers by studying figures from the Veterans Affairs and the Census Bureau. They say on a given night, 194,000 homeless veterans are out there with no home to go to. And of these, says the Alliance's Mary Cunningham,
about 44,000 to 64,000 veterans are chronically homeless. They've been living on the streets for long periods. They're repeatedly homeless, and they have a disability.
The disability may or may not be related to their military service, but still, says Cunningham, they did serve, and we do owe them better than that.
The number of veterans who are homeless in the United States really is a failure of public policy.
The homelessness among vets is not just older guys from wars a long time ago. Younger veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan have been trickling into shelters and soup kitchens. Cunningham says it's part of a larger problem.
There just isn't enough permanent supportive housing to meet the need.
The point is not to make us all feel guilty, she says, although
we need to make a bigger commitment to affordable housing and making sure that people who do need those services can get back into housing.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Here at the Peter B. Collins Show, impeachment has always been on the table.
Yeah.
heard comments from Democrat Maxine Waters, a member of the House Judiciary Committee, on the unusual hearing that will occur on Friday in the Rayburn office building, room 2141. And one of the people who will be attending is a prominent Republican legal scholar, Bruce Fine. He was part of Ken Starr's impeachment team against Bill Clinton. And he also served as a counsel over at the FCC back in the Reagan administration. Bruce Fine, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for inviting me, Peter.
Nice to talk with you again. And since the last time we spoke, I had a chance to see I, Impeachment, a play that you had a part in. You wrote most or all of that?
I think I contributed a substantial portion of the dialogue, yes.
Okay. They didn't offer writer credits in the bill, the stage bill, so I just wanted to approach that carefully. How long did you work on that, and did you primarily write the legal dialogue between the various characters?
Well, it was a long process. There were others involved that I can give credit to. It was something that I was working on in tandem with a book I've written called Constitutional Peril that will be published by Paul Graf Macmillan next month.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably was a couple-month period. And, of course, the legal words and theories were those that that I largely composed based upon my previous experience in impeachment, most appropriately, is that of Richard Nixon. It's his claims that if the president does it, it's legal. That's the source of most of President Bush's usurpations.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got a chance to see the play. It was put on by Shirley Golub, who was challenging Nancy Pelosi in the Democratic primary for her congressional seat. And I have to say it was interesting, and in particular the characters who played Pelosi, I mean the actors who played Pelosi and Bush, were both pretty good at depicting those two characters.
Yeah, the play really isn't calculated just to cast aspersion and alarm at Bush and Cheney and others, but also the Congress and the American people. It wasn't supposed to be so much what Bush and Cheney have done as much as what Congress and the American people have let them get away with.
Yeah.
Still, sovereignty resides in the people. Congress still retains the power, if they were shoved and pushed by the members of the public, to impeach and remove these gentlemen from office for high crimes and misdemeanors, of which there are many.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bruce Fine, the last I've heard, you are still on the list. You've been invited to testify, to make comments at this hearing on Friday morning before Chairman Conyers and the House Judiciary Committee. But in talking just a moment ago with Maxine Waters and yesterday with Congressman Kucinich, I've learned that the way this hearing has been set up sharply limits the ability of people like you, Elizabeth Holtzman, who was part of the Nixon impeachment Judiciary Committee, former Democratic Congresswoman from New York, and others who will be offering commentary, from directly indicting the President or the Vice President, because the rules of the House say that except in impeachment hearings, you cannot make those kinds of charges.
Well, yes, and let you have a little time for a personal anecdote that at one time is both laughable and yet so alarming to show how we've come to accept the President as royalty. This particular rule, Peter, stems from an old practice in the Great Britain Parliament that made it improper to speak irreverently or seditiously against the king. So the House of Representatives has borrowed a similar kind of rule, and what happened in my case, I had drafted all my testimony, which mentions expressly President Bush and Vice President Cheney, and described what they had done was vandalizing the Constitution every bit as thoroughly as the barbarian sacked Rome, and was told, well, this language would violate parliamentary requirements of decorum and decency towards the president. And indeed, let me read you out of Jefferson's manual that they used here, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
It says, this is what you cannot do. It says, you cannot suggest that the president misrepresented the truth or attempted to obstruct justice or lied or deceived the American people or committed an impeachable offense. And so I had to go back through my testimony, and where I had referred to Bush or Cheney, I would simply say the executive branch or the person who occupies 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. I mean, it was like out of an Alice in Wonderland a Humpty Dumpty show.
Yeah.
So now my testimony fits into those parliamentary rubrics, and I'll be able to testify, but with a language considerably toned down. It reminds me of, you know, how people must have had their testimony censored under Stalin or Mao or something. This is the United States, and it's a disgrace that you can't expressly identify public officials who work for us, who we pay for our tax money, and tell them, you know, especially accurately. It's because it's not a defense in your characterization of truth.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, truth may make the offense compounded because it hurts more. You know, that a citizen of the United States can't testify about what the president and vice president have done in their particular names, why you have to use obliqueness. You know, that's an earmark of weakness and effeteness.
Well, and we have enough problems with the corporate media ignoring this whole process. There's been very little coverage, particularly on television, of the efforts that Congressman Kucinich has made to introduce articles of impeachment and actually have them heard. And so he was given this opportunity. He took it. And when I spoke with him earlier in the week, he did acknowledge these constraints and that he chafes under them. But he said that there are a lot of words in the English language, and so he is going to be as creative as he can under the rules that you just cited. But Bruce Fine, we do have a problem here that this makes a mockery of the very important constitutional process of impeachment. And it suggests that it can be trivialized and dumbed down and basically contained in a hearing like this, which will be a one-day event that unless members of the committee assert themselves, it will simply be a narrow photo op, and the sound bites won't be any good because the language that you have to, the sanitized language that you have to use.
Yeah, it'll be all sanitized. There's another other important legal distinction between this hearing and a customary impeachment hearing, and that is under precedents that are clearly justified under the Constitution. In an impeachment hearing, you can't invoke executive privilege to refuse to respond or to reply to document requests from Congress. You can't hide behind secrecy. That's, of course, very important since the president has invoked secrecy to prevent us from knowing his legal theories behind his warrantless surveillance program and torture and extraordinary renditions, et cetera. We probably still only know about half of the secret spying programs ongoing because he invokes, again, executive privilege, national security. So by not announcing and holding a hearing as an impeachment inquiry, it basically continues the president's ability to stymie the investigation through claims of secrecy. We already seen what he's done. In the investigation of the firing of U.S. attorneys, he told Karl Rove, don't show up. Harriet Myers, don't show up. Joshua Bolton, don't show up. Well, how far do you get an investigation when your chief witnesses don't even appear?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a weakness of tomorrow's hearing, but it's certainly far superior to anything that's happened to date.
Bruce Fine is with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines open if you'd like to talk with him. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And I'll reiterate for our weekend listeners on Green 960 in San Francisco, KPOJ in Portland, and KPTK in Seattle. My conversation right now with Bruce Fine is occurring on Thursday afternoon. You're going to hear it replayed on the weekend after this hearing has already taken place. So please don't allow that continuity issue to distract you. Bruce Fine, as I've referenced, you were part of Ken Starr's impeachment team that investigated Bill Clinton and determined that there were four charges that could be brought. I'm one of those people who felt that that was a misguided impeachment effort. Nevertheless, I concede that Bill Clinton lied under oath, and therefore the charges that were brought related to that were appropriate, at least, for the first stage of the impeachment process. And
well,
so I have a two-part question for you. One is, when you look at the relative crime of Bill Clinton and the relative crime of George W. Bush, do you have regrets about the Clinton impeachment episode? And secondly, as you look at the situation today, how do you compare the Democratic leadership's waffling on the matter with the very strident approach that the Republican leaders took back in the late 90s?
First, the there were two articles of impeachment voted against Clinton, not four. One was for obstruction of justice, the other for perjury. And to my mind, the critical element that pushed this, and I admit it was a close call into impeachable offense, was that the president never said, well, yeah, I did it, and it was wrong. You know, I was under stress, it was embarrassing, et cetera, but it was wrong.
Yeah.
Because that means that it doesn't create a precedent that the president gets to lie up. The judge tells him, you know, 3 feet away, you have to answer the question. And if you don't want to answer the question, be silent, but you can't lie about it. And the president, and because the things that we need to worry about in terms of the institutional integrity of the Constitution are the precedents. They lie around like loaded weapons if they're not rebuked. And that was, in my mind, what pushed a marginal case over the top is Clinton never got on TV and said, listen, what I did is really wrong. Nobody should ever do this. I was in a stressful situation. My family would have been embarrassed. Don't do it. It's wrong. I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
That would have taken it out of the impeachable category. But certainly it's accurate to say, even given what I consider the compounded elements of his misconduct, it's far short of Bush, who has basically revolutionized the, you know, if you want to call it, it's a counter-revolution against our own Constitution in eliminating the rule of law, eliminating checks and balances, turning the premise of the country, namely that we have unalienable rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and the purpose of government is to secure those individual rights. Now, he's turned that around. No, the purpose of government is to traipse all over the world and kill anybody that the president says is a suspected al-Qaeda.
Mm-hmm.
Enemy combatant. No due process, no rule of law, nothing. And that, I consider what Bush and Cheney have done to be the most egregious treachery against the Constitution in the history of the United States by far. Let me just give you one example, Peter, what theories we're operating under today. Since 9/11, President Bush, with the acquiescence, I would say, of Congress and the American people, has said, we are in a permanent state of war against international terrorism. Now, international terrorism has no geographical limit. It's everywhere. So what the president says, the corollary of that is all the world, including every square inch of the United States, is a battlefield because al-Qaeda would like to kill us anywhere. Now, if you're standing on a battlefield, then you can use military force against you. You can use military law. And the president's theory of his power is that he can go anywhere in or outside the United States, tell the military if you find somebody you think is al-Qaeda, you shoot and kill him with military force. If there are civilians around because he blends into the civilian population, that's too bad. If you kill him, that's collateral damage. That is the theory we're operating under today. Now, it's true the president has actually exerted that theory in Yemen and Macedonia and elsewhere, not in the United States. But that's just because he says he hasn't decided to do it yet. But if he goes into Peter B., if he says, Peter B. Collins, I think you're nesting maybe one of your producers or assistants at al-Qaeda, he says, well, listen, we're on a battlefield because all the world's a battlefield. If I want to use the military to try to kill your assistant, so be it. And you sometimes make mistakes in war, so if you get it wrong, that's collateral damage. We see that happening every day in Afghanistan and Iraq. They go, all right, we can get to bomb anybody we say is blending in the civilian population who we think is a terrorist. And look at all the casualties, the civilian casualties we see mounting up. Now, I go back to say, it's true the president hasn't exerted that authority in the United States, but heck, we're all living under a sword of Damocles. He can do it any time.
He has, in fact, in the Almari case. Almari is a non-citizen who was picked up in Peoria, Illinois, and is being held in a Navy brig without basic constitutional rights. Bruce,
he's been there 5 years. He had this very convoluted Fourth Circuit opinion last week and read 200 and some pages long. I've just gotten through it. But the gist of it is he's never been on a battlefield. It's not said that he's ever fighting on behalf of any particular nation. You can charge people with crimes and try them with due process and punish them. Timothy McVeigh, Mr. Moussaoui, Mr. G. Ramzi Yosef, all these kinds of people. But you don't just say the president picks out anybody he wants to say, no, I think you're an enemy combatant, I'll kill you. With no review whatsoever. I mean, that is a power stronger than King George III, who we overthrew in 1776.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, because after the break here, Bruce Fine, I want to explore the term monarchical. Bruce Fine is with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. As we mentioned, in Friday's Judiciary Committee hearing, he will be offering a presentation that is scrubbed a little bit to comply with the rules. More in a moment, here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You got a comment? You can't call in? Email me, peter@peterbcollins.com.
our radio show for the whole family. Dysfunctional family. Stephanie Miller on AM 540 KRXA, 6 a.m. weekdays.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Socolo Restaurant in Pacific Grove is the place to go when you're looking for ultra-authentic Mexican food. From our handmade tortillas to our delicious Angus skirt steak, Socolo does it right. You won't find canned tomatoes, frozen meat, or pre-made items at Socolo. Everything is made here. We proudly use only Angus beef. Some of our specialty items include pozole, chicken mole, handmade sopes, and the only handmade flour tortilla on the peninsula. We feature seafood items like wild salmon, ceviche, and numerous shrimp and fish dishes. If you're looking for fresh and authentic Mexican food, Socolo is the place to go. Socolo is located at 162 Fountain Avenue in Pacific Grove. Our phone number is 373-7911. Catering and food to go is also available. Socolo Restaurant at 162 Fountain Avenue, Pacific Grove is the place to go for quality, authentic Mexican food. Call 373-7911 for takeout or reservations. Socolo will also be opening soon in downtown Salinas. Look for us.
Yeah.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com. Of the moment from Counting Crows. It's called Mr. Jones, and I'll play that in honor of Walter Jones, a principled Republican who will be participating in this almost impeachment hearing scheduled for Friday before the House Judiciary Committee. We continue with Bruce Fine, another principled Republican who is willing to speak out, but as we discuss, the rules of the House will limit his direct commentary as bluntly as he just presented it before the break here on this program. Bruce, over the last couple of days, I've just started into reading Jane Mayer's new book. She's the New Yorker reporter who's written The Dark Side, and in it you're quoted quite frequently just in the first 100 pages that I've read. And as she's profiling David Addington, the vice president's now chief of staff, he was counsel before Scooter Libby went to jail, the term monarchical came up, and this is actually attributed to Dick Cheney in describing his desire to restore and expand presidential power. He, of course, was there during the Nixon administration and Ford and felt that things were rolled back in a way that he didn't like. And I'd just like to ask you, you referenced King George just before the break. This concept of monarchical is something that Dick Cheney seems comfortable with in our representative democracy.
I think that's accurate. I've read all of Jane's book. I questioned her judgment when she quoted me so often, but that was but this is one of the things that I want the audience to understand about this claim that Cheney made that somehow when Bush came into office, the presidency was some poor, crippled branch of government. When President Bush was inaugurated in January of 2001, the powers of the president were at their zenith. There wasn't any independent counsel act. The War Powers Resolution had been interpreted to be meaningless. There are no Boland Amendments limiting what the president could do in Nicaragua or anything like that. There used to be a statute called the Clark Amendment that prohibited covert action in Angola. The president's powers were at their zenith, and the Supreme Court had held that the president could revoke treaties unilaterally. Jimmy Carter did it with regard to the Taiwan Defense Treaty. And what did George Bush do? He unilaterally pulled us out of the ABM treaty. So if you look, and the Supreme Court had also held null and void what was called legislative vetoes. These were provisions that enabled one House of Congress to prevent arms sales to particular countries. Indeed, there was a provision in the War Powers Resolution that would have enabled one arm of government to vote to require the pullout of military troops. All these things had been nullified by the Supreme Court. So that this idea that the president was some kind of a weak a branch of government was utterly ridiculous. And even when you consider war, remember that in the bombing campaigns against Bosnia and then Serbia, which were the equivalent of war, the Congress of the United States refused to specifically authorize what was done. Mm-hmm. So there you had an example of unilateral executive fighting a war that went unrebuked. Well, there was an effort by Tom Campbell. He was a representative out in California.
Sure. I do know Tom.
Mm-hmm. He brought a lawsuit to try to challenge that, and the court threw it out, said you don't have standing or whatever.
Yeah.
So the power of the presidency was already at its zenith when they came in. So he's just trying to make it into the only branch of government whatsoever. And monarchy fits quite within that kind of concept.
Stephen Salinas joins us. Steve, you're on the Peter B. Collins Show. Thanks for calling.
Oh, glad to do it. Probably not has not much to do with what you're talking about, but a year and a half, 2 years ago, I heard Mr. Fine on Tom Hartman's program, and he was predicting then another 9/11 type event this summer, and it would help the Republicans in the elections. I wonder if that still had that same feeling.
All right, Bruce.
You mean whether there'll be an October surprise with another 9/11?
That's the gist of the question. Yes.
No, I don't think we're at that stage. But I do recall this, and you remember if you read Jane Mayer's book, a quote out of David Addington's mouth when he said, "One more bomb, and we can get rid of that FISA law."
Yeah.
That's the crassness with which these people look at. You know, the safety of American people. Okay, well, if we can get rid of the law and 100 Americans have to die, so be it. You know, let's sacrifice them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite at that level of cynicism to think they'd purposely plot another 9/11 to try to win the elections. And more likely is that they will launch a military strike against Iran's nuclear facilities, claiming that they're about ready to destroy Israel or something, or launch missiles against our friends in Europe. And in that way, heighten the national security focus to the advantage of McCain.
Mm-hmm.
That's more plausible, I think, than another 9/11.
Bruce Fine, I have about a minute remaining. Earlier this week, I talked with Elizabeth Holtzman, the former Democratic congresswoman who was on the House Judiciary Committee at the time of the Nixon impeachment proceedings. And she said that her comment to the Judiciary Committee on Friday will be, "You cannot do nothing." And I'd like you to address that, because I think this is an important part, that I don't believe that impeachment is optional and that people like Pelosi or Reid can just say, "Oh, not now."
Well, it's not optional in the sense that the Constitution doesn't say you can white out the provision for impeaching for high crimes and misdemeanors. The real test is it optional in the sense that there will be no political sufferance, no political retaliation against them for showing cowardliness and the contempt for the Constitution and their obligation to remove people for high crimes and misdemeanors. Nothing is going to happen, Peter, for this simple reason. Nancy Pelosi is compromised. She knew about the waterboarding. She knew about the illegal surveillances early on in 2002 and did nothing about it. That's why she told John Conyers, "Don't ever open an impeachment inquiry." That's why she took impeachment off the table in November of 2006. Her political ambition is going to trump what's good for the United States of America. That's just a political reality. Now, it won't happen again if she loses her seat. And if people who do display this kind of effeteness in the face of a monarchical government are removed from office. But other than that...
Bruce Fine, thank you very much. I'm Peter B. Collins.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties.
The precepts is centered on Satan.
The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader. From Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor, you name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Ich bin ein Kandidat.
People of Berlin, people of the world, this is our moment. This is our time.
Management is blamed for the Utah mine disaster.
The mine operators, mine design was inadequate.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. In an event that recalled John F. Kennedy's visit during the Cold War, Barack Obama today made a speech at Berlin's Victory Column that drew a crowd estimated at 200,000. It was a call to unity.
This is the moment when we must defeat terror and dry up the well of extremism that supports it. This threat is real, and we cannot shrink from our responsibility to combat it.
He acknowledged differences between America and Europe, but said the United States can't do it alone in Afghanistan and needs more help from NATO. Reporter Peter Bild was there.
The crowd was polite applause. It was not the ovation that maybe some people would have expected, because it was a thoughtful speech. Not very, very long, talking about an approach, a different concept to foreign policy.
Obama's high-profile appearance did not go unnoticed by John McCain, who took his campaign to a German restaurant in Columbus, Ohio.
I'd love to give a speech in Germany to a political speech or a speech that maybe the German people would be interested in, but I'd much prefer to do it as President of the United States.
Now this.
The contagious virus that causes warts can be spread by contact.
Dude, where you been?
Hey!
And it can happen in an instant. Want to stop warts just as fast?
W!
Fast-acting Compound W Freeze-Off. Unlike liquid wart removers that can take time to work, Compound W Freeze-Off's deep penetrating action works to destroy the wart in as little as one application. And that's why the W is the one moms trust. W! Fast-acting Compound W. The wart stops here. Use as directed.
It's time to get more for less. Because right now at the Home Depot end of season clearance event, you can save 25% or more on select items throughout the store. Everything from cordless power tools, hand tools, wet dry vacs, and more. All from your favorite brands like Ridgid, Ryobi, and DeWalt. Just look for the yellow tags and save. At the Home Depot end of season clearance event, the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid in U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details.
It will be a year next month since the deadly Utah mine collapse. Bob Murray, head of the company that owns the mine, insisted the collapse was caused by an earthquake. Today, federal regulators released their findings.
It was not, and I'll repeat, not, it was not a natural occurring earthquake.
Richard Stickler, head of the Mine Safety and Health Administration, says some pillars of coal left to prevent cave-ins had been cut. Others had been undermined.
These pillars failed under excessive load and ejected coal very violently and filled up most of the tunnels or entries in the affected area.
Six miners were trapped. Their remains have never been recovered. Three others died in a failed rescue attempt. Today's report says Murray Energy violated its approved mining plan and misled regulators about the dangers in the mine. The company says it's preparing a response. It's been slapped with a $1.6 million fine. Stocks took a beating today. The Dow plunged 283 points to 11,349. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus.
The bad news just keeps piling up, and we heard that home resales have now fallen to their lowest level in 10 years in the month of June. We also have the number of vacant homes on the market at an all-time high. Nearly 19 million homes stood empty in the month of June.
And the Labor Department reported that new claims for unemployment benefits rose by 34,000 last week. The home sales drop of 2.6% was more than double the 1% decline predicted by many economists, and it means home sales are down more than 15% from the same time last year.
We've gone from being excessively exuberant during the housing boom to being overly pessimistic. Buyers are on the sidelines waiting for some encouragement.
Walter Maloney of the National Association of Realtors says they'll get it from the housing stimulus package coming out of Washington. He predicts gradual improvement in the second half of the year. The price of crude oil moved higher today, up more than a dollar a barrel to $125.67. In Brownsville, cleanup after the storm. What had been Hurricane Dolly is now a tropical depression dumping heavy rain in South Texas. Officials say restoring power in wind-damaged areas will take up to a week. A violent storm blew through Epsom, New Hampshire today.
I was in my garage. It took these trees right here, which are, approximately 100 feet high, and snapped them right off like twigs.
One person was killed in Epsom. Storms cut a 25-mile path across the state, damaging at least 100 homes. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
You spend your meals over chewing your food. That unhealthy obsession with seals is troubling your boss. And each night, you circle your living room waiting for its return. Well, grab your chum bucket, shark fans. Shark Week is back. With 7 nights of the biggest, baddest, most shark-infested special episodes you've ever seen. Let the frenzy begin, my friends. Shark Week is back, starting this Sunday at 9 on the Discovery Channel.
It's time to get more for less. Because right now at the Home Depot end-of-season clearance event, you can save 25% or more on select items throughout the store. Everything from cordless power tools, hand tools, wet-dry vacs, and more. All from your favorite brands, like Ridgid, Ryobi, and DeWalt. Just look for the yellow tags and save. At the Home Depot end-of-season clearance event, the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid in U.S.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Every week about this time, we set aside an hour to talk about military and veterans issues with Scott Dick. He's our regular contributor. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
And, Scott, I know that you spent some time stationed in Germany. You know the language fairly well. And I thought we'd kick off the hour today with a live report from Berlin. And my friend Sven Blume is with us. Sven and I worked together when I helped train some Germans to launch an American-style talk radio station in Berlin way back at the end of the last century. And Sven has stayed up late in Berlin tonight to talk with us. Hello, Sven.
Hello, good. What is it? Evening, morning? It's in the middle of the night.
It's afternoon for us. And how are you, Sven?
Yes, I'm fine. We had a very exciting day today because Obama was in town.
Right. He had a little campaign stop there in Berlin. Give us the scene setter and a report. How many people showed up and what did Obama have to say?
Oh, gosh. There were over 200,000 people at the Tiergarten, maybe some... guys, if you know the Tiergarten, it's very close to the Brandenburger Gate and
right.
to the Siegessäule, the Victory Column. And he was on stage at the Victory Column, but he arrived this morning at 10. Then he had a little meeting with our chancellor and with Frau Merkel. And after this...
And let me just ask, Sven, did he attempt to give her a shoulder rub or any kind of back rub?
Pardon?
Did Barack Obama try to give Merkel...
Yes.
A back rub. That's what George W. Bush did, and she was very uncomfortable about it.
No, there was just a little handshaking at the end and talking, nothing, not like George Bush. No.
Okay, good.
Don't worry. And it was very nice because after he had this meeting, he did go to his Hotel Adlon at the Brandenburger Gate, and then he did go to do some exercise, some gym.
Yeah. Well, he got caught working out 3 times in 1 day a couple of weeks ago in Chicago.
Oh, gosh. No, he only did it once here. And after this, he was 20 minutes late on stage, and there were over 200,000 people waiting for him. And many of these people were wearing T-shirts with his face on it and pins. And it's more like he's a pop star, like Madonna or something like this.
Well, did Bono come over to introduce him? I played a little music from Zooropa as we were starting the segment here.
What did you do?
I played some music from U2's Zooropa, and that was recorded in Berlin and featured the Zoo train station there along the Kurfürstendamm on the album art. So I was just wondering if Bono was there with one of his many fashion sunglasses.
Sorry, I didn't get it with the sunglasses.
That's
confusing me a little bit.
I'm sorry. Scott, do you want to translate? You speak some German.
No, it's sunglasses.
Yeah, I know what sunglasses are. No, but it's very interesting for us here with Obama, because everybody's talking about Obama like he's already the president. So for us, it's not like maybe he will become the president. For us, some people on the street said, yeah, there will be the new president. The president of the U.S. will be here. Yeah, I saw him. Because 70% of the Germans want him for president.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also we've seen, Sven, that the polling in Europe shows a slight increase in the popularity of George W. Bush. And when the pollsters ask why, they say, well, because he's leaving real soon.
Yeah, George W. Bush is not really popular in Germany.
Now, Sven, tell us a little bit about what Obama's speech was on, because he was criticized in this country for holding a campaign rally in Germany. And also, some people think he's trying to kind of steal the legacy of John F. Kennedy with his Ich bin ein Berliner speech.
Yeah, for us, it's like, sure, the Berliners, well, like, everybody knows Ich bin ein Berliner, or like Ronald Reagan when he said, tear down, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Right.
Everybody was waiting, like, will he say something like this or not? Because when he did go upstairs, he started like, I'm not here as a candidate, I'm coming here as a private citizen of the world, but everybody knows he's here because he's a candidate.
Yeah.
And then he said these words like, people of the world, now do your duty, people of the world, look at Berlin. People of the world, look at Berlin. So this maybe was something for us, like we were very excited. Everyone was like, ooh.
And so was there a deeper message about world peace, about cooperation in America pulling back from the unilateralism of Bush?
Yeah, he was talking about the problems the European has about the climate change and all this stuff, and it talked a lot of our problems the European has, and that we have to fix all this stuff together, and about Afghanistan, he said something, and that the whole world, we have to work together. And I think the atmosphere, you know, a few years ago when George Bush started all these war things in Iraq and everything, the Germans were a lot of against the U.S. Everybody was like, oh, God, you're from the U.S. U.S. wasn't really popular in Germany at this time. But now with Obama, it becomes more and more popular. People are more open to the U.S. now and really like to go there for visiting.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sven, I'm just curious, does Obama's race come up at all in discussions among Germans about this presidential candidate?
You mean because about his race, that he's black? What do you mean?
Yeah, that he's black.
I think, is it a problem for us? What do you mean?
Well, I'm just curious if people make a comment about it or if they just accept him, that he's just an American who happens to be black, as opposed to what we hear in our media over here, which is a lot of attention to the fact that he is African-American.
I think it's no problem for us. Nobody's talking about. We are more talking about are the Americans ready to become an Afro-American president? Do they really vote for him? For us, it's no problem. We are very liberal here, so we don't care. We have a woman as a chancellor.
Scott, you got any questions or comments for Sven?
No, I've encountered a little bit where they. Down in the south of Germany where they talk about the fact that he's black, but other than that, no, I mean, soldiers, American soldiers, traditionally over the decades, many of them stay in Germany because they have been treated so differently than in America. There's many, many retirees who married German women and stayed in Germany, and The climate is completely different, especially for those who were stationed in Germany in the 60s, 70s, the 80s, even the 90s. They love to just stay there because they're not bothered by people.
Yeah. No, Sven, I think it speaks to the fact that many Germans are more evolved and don't see this as a racial issue and don't really respond on that same level. We've still got a lot of rampant racism here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. No, for us it's more like... we see this new coming up Obama now, and for us it's more he has new visions. He wanted to change some things, what happened in the last years. That's much more important for us. We are not looking about the races or everything like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sven, I want to thank you for staying up late to talk with us, but before I let you go, I always like to get an ace, let an ace reporter like you tell me what I didn't ask you about that we really need to know. What else happened either with Obama's visit or his speech that our American listeners ought to know about?
Oh, God. Wow.
That's my trick question for you, Sven.
People of the world, look at Berlin. That's what I would say.
And did the controversy over the location settle down because he wanted to use the Brandenburg Gate and Merkel didn't like that? And then when he selected this area near the Victory Statue, a lot of historians said, that doesn't play so well if you go back to the Nazi era.
Yeah, it's the Victory Column. It's just 1 mile away from the Brandenburg Gate, and when he was on stage, he could see the Brandenburg Gate. So I think it was no big deal at the end. So everything was okay for us.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, Sven, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and thank you very much for your special report from Berlin today.
Thank you a lot. You're welcome.
Okay, good to talk with you.
Have a good day.
All righty, we will.
Bye.
Scott Dick, you stay with us. We'll continue in just a moment, and we're going to talk about Obama and McCain and their fortunes with the media this week and some of the comments that each candidate has made about military and veterans issues. That's what we'll pick up on as we continue. Scott Dick is with us this entire hour, and you can call in toll-free with a question or comment. The number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hi, this is Patty Ross with your real estate update for the Monterey Peninsula for the week of July 21st. Condos, they are actually the best value category right now. Condo prices are always the first to come down when the market turns. All the first-time buyers who want to get their foot in the door with a condo can now buy a house for the same money. But for those who want to downsize, there are great opportunities out there. And here are just a few. The first one is at 34 Spanish Bay Circle in Pebble Beach. This is a three-bedroom, three-and-a-half bath for $2,995,000. This is a private Spanish Bay sanctuary with uncompromising views of the golf course, Pacific Ocean, and beyond. A lush, intimate courtyard leads into the two-story formal entry with soaring ceilings and museum-quality finishes throughout. It's been completely remodeled. This spacious 3,280-square-foot residence has three bedrooms, including two master suites. It's 3,280 square feet, feels much more like a house than a condo. It's a really great deal, actually, at $2,995,000. Next, we move over to Del Mesa Carmel. This is at 274, two-bedroom, two-baths for only $789. This is a peaceful cul-de-sac location with beautiful forest and mountain views. You can follow the private park-like entrance past the majestic magnolia tree to this 1,814-square-foot expanded C unit with a separate dining room. The inviting entryway welcomes you into the spacious living room and the expanded family room and den beyond. It's got private forest views from three sides of this lovely home. New carpets and paint. You got to be 55 and older, but lots to do here from lawn bowling to swimming to tennis. Beautifully maintained grounds. Just if you're ready to downsize, this one is it. Next, we move over to 73 Hacienda Carmel in Carmel Valley. This is a two-bedroom, one-bath at just $415. That's my value pick listing of the week. This is a very desirable adult community on the Monterey Peninsula. You can move right into this remodeled unit and enjoy condo living at its finest. The amenities include a pool, library, clubhouse, exercise room, laundry facilities, convenient parking, and walking trails. Everything is new here, from the wonderful cherry wood floors and skylights to the new countertops, appliances, windows, doors. They even added insulation in the master bedroom. Absolute turnkey and priced to sell, 850 square feet on this one. So, if you're interested in any of these fabulous condos, please call me, 236-4513. Email me at pattyross@kw.com, or check out these and lots more listings on my website, www.pattyrosscarmel.com.
Well, good afternoon. Checking traffic on KRXA. Not a whole lot to tell you about right now. The remnants of an older crash in Morgan Hill, South 101, after Tenon Avenue. We had a motorcycle down initially in the middle lanes. That and two other cars cleared off to the side now with minor injuries. Emergency crews still out there, and it looks like they're waiting for a couple of tow trucks to arrive. Salinas, San John Road at 183. We have an injury crash. A minivan skidded off the roadway. CHP on the scene. Possible slow traffic as you go past the scene. South 101 on the Oak Avenue off-ramp. Down in the King City area, we have reports of a couple of people off to the side of that ramp possibly having a fight. That's creating somewhat of a scene, so traffic possibly slowing as you go past there. Northbound 25 before 146, San Benito County. This is out in Piscines. Watch out for a couple of large tree branches in the northbound lane. This is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know if the airbags in that used car you're buying work? Step one to finding out. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. I'm Nate with traffic on KRXA.
It's time for more on the Peter B. Collins Show. You know, we'll be live from the Democratic Convention in Denver at the end of August. You can help. Go to my website at peterbcollins.com and click on You Can Help. We're talking military and veterans issues with Scott Dick, our regular contributor on these matters, and you can call in toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. If you want to know more about Scott, check out his website at scottdickshow.com. He's the host of a progressive talk show that follows me every evening on our flagship station, KRXA 540 in Monterey, California. Well, Scott, it's been quite an interesting week because John McCain has been struggling for media attention. While when he does get attention, he continues to bungle facts and embarrass himself on a regular basis. And his campaign even issued tags to reporters that are on the trail with him this week that they're members of the junior varsity because all of the top dogs went on the photo op tour of Afghanistan, Iraq, Kuwait, and Israel, Palestine, Berlin with Obama.
Yeah, he's just a bundle of gaffes and outright falsehoods, Peter. I nailed him on a couple of lies last week, and of course, the media is complete. I see this thing saying that the media, right-wing media machine, is saying that there's Obama coverage bias because the network sent their anchors with Obama to Europe, and John McCain is left just to befuddled in his own sort of uselessness.
Well, and when McCain bungles things like, you know, claiming that there's a border between Iraq and
Pakistan,
when he repeatedly refers to Czechoslovakia, and you've been on his case about that, it does get reported, but it's immediately minimized as just, you know, just a minor misstatement of the facts.
And then when he really goes off the reservation, Peter, sorry to interrupt, then they just edit it out and put in new comments as if that's what the American people need.
Well, and this was a first this week because we saw networks pissing on other networks. Katie Couric conducted an interview with McCain where he completely messed up the timeline and the chronology of the so-called surge and the so-called Sunni awakening. And rather than play that on the air and show this mess that he made, they cleaned it up and used a quote from a totally different interview to try to make him sound intelligent. And CNN and MSNBC got wind of this, and CBS had posted the full transcript of the interview on a website, but not the full video clip. And so CBS was deeply embarrassed as these other networks went public with the full story that CBS didn't bother to report.
And yet the right-wing nuts in the nutosphere is complaining about liberal media bias. I find that grotesquely ironic, especially when we talk about a guy who is a foreign policy expert and refers probably half a dozen times to the non-existent country of Czechoslovakia. And, Peter, the reason that this is so important for me is if you're going to call yourself a foreign policy, national security policy expert, and he said that, and he won't apologize for his previous gaffe, then you should probably know where you're going to put anti-ballistic missiles and on whose soil you're going to sign those treaties. Because if he wants to go and speak to the ambassador of Czechoslovakia and sign bilateral security agreements with Czechoslovakia, he's going to have a hard time doing it. And it makes him sound ridiculous.
Well, and Scott, one of the areas where the media is really carrying water for John McCain is around the whole notion of, quote, the surge has worked. And this is something that Obama has tried to deflect without directly confronting. When he's asked about this, he says, well, it's more than the additional American troops. And he's right. It's Muqtada al-Sadr standing down. It's the money that we've used to pay off the Sunnis to facilitate this so-called awakening procedure.
It's completion of the ethnic cleansing.
Ethnic cleansing and the refugees. This is all combined to produce a reduction in violence. But as we spoke earlier this week with Professor Juan Cole from the University of Michigan, this reduction really is that we're back to 2005 levels. 2007 was when things really got the worst in Iraq, at least from the American perspective, and we're now dialed back to where we were about 3 years ago. But that's not success, it's not victory, and it's not all because of the so-called surge.
And when he says things like, John McCain I'm speaking of, I know how to win wars, my question is, then, which ones are you talking about, Mr. McCain? Is it the war in Vietnam that you won? Or is it the war in Afghanistan that you won? Or is it the war in Iraq, the occupation of Iraq that was totally unnecessary to begin with? Everybody on the right that is supporting John McCain is saying the surge worked, and Senator Obama was against the surge, therefore he has no judgment.
But the media is chiming in, and Chris Matthews, Andrea Mitchell, others who are...
I heard him try to nail Barbara Boxer today on TV and try to get her to admit that Senator Obama was wrong about the surge. And she was saying, no, he has judgment. He thought that there's many other factors, and this is an unnecessary war and occupation to begin with. And I agree completely with Senator Obama.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Wolf didn't get what he wanted. They want everybody to admit that the surge was a success, and this is the talking point right now while Senator Obama's out of the country. The surge was a success. He was against it, therefore he has bad judgment.
Well, and that he won't admit it.
Yeah.
And again, there is no conclusive case that the surge achieved the goals that were articulated by the president. We've got, once again, these provincial elections have been canceled. They were vetoed, the bill that came out of the parliament. And so the kind of reconciliation that the surge was supposed to provide breathing room for has essentially not occurred. But they want to take two very simple ideas. We put more troops in and violence is down, and they connect those without any proof.
And then you take those units out, and he says we're down to pre-surge levels, which was false.
Not true. That's right.
Not true.
We're 15,000 up.
And then he says that the Iraqis don't want a timetable after multiple sources confirmed and validated have said they do want a timetable. He said, no, they don't. And then he had the amazing gall to say, I know what the Iraqis want.
Yeah.
This is George Bush the third.
We got to take a break. We'll return with Scott Dick. Your calls and comments are welcome at 888-5-PETER-B. Gotta believe there's
something inside. Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Where are the gaffes? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Barack Obama speaks, thousands cheer. How many more times must we hear that? This defies the laws of gravity. He's been to Jordan, where the king himself chauffeurs him to the plane. He emerged from meetings with Israelis and Palestinians without so much as a ding. And, of course, he visited Iraq, where he met with the generals and even sank a three-point shot playing basketball with the troops.
I really get a kick out of spending time with the troops.
And as this spectacle unfolds before us, a stunned nation wonders, when is he going to commit a gaffe? This is getting crazy. I got an email. Dave, Barack Obama in the Middle East being followed by three starry-eyed news anchors? The world hasn't seen that since the first Christmas. But what else can the media do? Man, you can't help but empathize with John McCain. We all know what it's like to think you have the lead in the high school musical all sewed up, and then the new guy walks into the audition with all the songs memorized. What really had to hurt was that picture of Obama and General Petraeus sharing a helicopter and smiling, with a cryptic Petraeus quote that there are more Democrats in the military than people think. Meantime, McCain has committed approximately three gaffes at a time when no one's even covering him. Obama addresses thousands in Berlin. John McCain goes to a grocery store to prove he knows the price of a gallon of milk. I can absolutely see why it's driving conservatives into a blind rage. Now, I'm not surprised Robert Novak didn't see that pedestrian splayed on the windshield of his Corvette. Blind rage will do that. Now this.
Great moments in Olympic history from Tiger Balm.
In 2000, the women's softball team did America proud by pulling through for gold. You, on the other hand, somehow pulled a tricep after trying some weird new swing at the batting cages. Oh! Nice job.
Tiger Balm is the natural way to conquer pain. 100-year formula, trusted by athletes from more than 100 countries. Tiger Balm works where it hurts. Available everywhere.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor authentic Chinese dishes like congee and juke at Jim's Restaurant, 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Live.
live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Now, was it the awakening before the surge? Or the surge before the awakening? I don't know. Does John McCain suffer from memory loss? Or is he just kind of full of it and says whatever he wants and expects that to be treated as reality? We're talking with Scott Dick here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Your call's welcome at 888-5-PETER-B. And, Scott, I'm looking at Thursday's New York Times, which has a kind of mini-analysis piece written by Michael Cooper. And this is kind of maddening because the way these things are framed always gives McCain a kind of out or the benefit of the doubt. His opening paragraph, Senator John McCain was chiding Senator Obama for, quote, a false depiction of what actually happened, quote, in Iraq, in a television interview this week. But in giving his chronology of events in Iraq, Mr. McCain gave what critics said was his own false depiction. So here, the attack on Obama from McCain is permitted to stand, but the criticism from critics of Mr. McCain is couched in a kind of a qualified way. I'll read it again. But in giving his chronology of events in Iraq, Mr. McCain gave what critics said was his own false depiction. Now, why is it that Michael Cooper cannot manage to say, without citing critics and putting it in a passive voice, that what Mr. McCain said is flatly untrue? We're not necessarily saying he intentionally misstated it, but it is untrue. And here we have the New York Times getting squishy and unable to explicitly say, you know, what he said is not true.
I don't know, Peter. I'm frustrated, too, because the truth is plain. It's simple. The Anwar awakening was so much before. You and I talked about the bringing the Sunnis in before the surge. We could probably go back to the radio record and find it where we talked about it. This is so ridiculous. And, you know, I think the New York Times is all over the map on this because it's so simple. I saw this in the paper the other day, and I don't know if it was an AP report. Critics of waterboarding describe it as torture. Waterboarding was blah, blah, blah. Critics describe it as torture.
Yeah.
Not everybody else on the planet, and it's not against the rule. We've been punishing it since the 1800s. Critics describe it as torture.
I believe the Geneva Conventions explicitly describe waterboarding as torture.
Right. I don't know why they're carrying water for this guy. Are they just trying to keep it from being such a blowout that people are going to stop reading the newspaper between now and November? Why are they shoring this guy up? I hear CNN talking about polls that look like McCain is gaining on Obama in swing states. You know, it's like, so? And they're presenting this material as if it's true, and they're not, as if there's something wrong with you and me, Peter, about saying Anbar was in September of 06, the surge wasn't even talked about until January of 07. There's something wrong with you and me because we're not giving McCain something that he deserves.
Right, and so McCain's explanation is that his term surge is not what you describe as surge. And he's trying to say, oh, insurgency, that was going on before the president ordered more troops into Iraq. But you know, he's playing fast and loose, and again, the media is complicit in this. And what's really insidious here from my point of view, Scott, is that McCain is accusing Obama of being, deceitful, untruthful, dishonest about events in Iraq, and he is misstating the record in an attempt to prove that Obama isn't telling the truth. So for McCain to be let off the hook as he lies in an attempt to prove falsely that Obama has lied, and the media goes soft on that and won't say it the way I just did.
Right. They don't say, wait a minute, Senator Obama, in his characterization of this, is completely accurate. And John McCain is dead wrong on the timing. How, I just said it. How hard is it for somebody to write that? It is a checkable fact. You, all the Limbaughs and Hannitys and O'Reillys in the world are, would have a tough time spinning this. What they spin is Hannity, for example, saying Senator Obama was in Afghanistan for 2 hours, and he suddenly decided to send more troops there. I know that's an outright lie, and it, because Obama's been talking about troops to Afghanistan since 06.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's on the record, but it's not important. What's true is not important. What's more important is to spin, and the New York Times, that liberal, you know, liberal bastion of liberal media, is, you know, just telling the truth, I guess.
And here's another one of these really squishy paragraphs in the same article by Michael Cooper. If Mr. McCain found himself criticized for seeming to confuse the chronology of events,
Seeming, right.
Okay. Again, if Mr. McCain found himself criticized for seeming to confuse the chronology of events in Iraq, some analysts said Mr. Obama seemed to be giving too little credit to the surge for improving conditions in Iraq. So here we go. We're letting McCain off the hook because he only seemed to confuse the chronology, but then we shift to an uncredited assault on Obama. Some analysts, unnamed, said that he seemed to be giving too little credit to the surge for improving conditions in Iraq. And so this implies that it's a simple fact that everyone embraces that the surge has improved conditions in Iraq.
That's a total front piece for McCain and the right-wing echo machine. The analyst might be the Max, what's his name from Boot?
Max Boot, yeah.
Max Boot, who's claimed that the right-wing nuts over at Fox Network, they've all claimed it because that is a White House talking point. The surge has worked. We are winning. We can't take our troops out, but we're winning, and the surge has worked. And so if they repeat it often enough, and they use this kind of language that's not squishy, it's outright deception. He is deceiving the reading public as if there's a question whether the Anbar awakening was before the surge. And the fact that who cares if the right-wing nuts have declared the surge to work? The premise of the surge, the premise of 4 years of failed strategy, which McCain claims, suddenly everything's washed and white and all new again.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans are all like, we're winning in Iraq, and, you know, it's...
And what's wrong with those of you who don't accept that? That I mean, they just assert that we're winning, and McCain has said it three times this week. We are winning. We have won.
Right. No, it's past tense. It's present tense. It's the gerunds. It's the ing words. It's all. It's just. And there, because Peter, I think this is the only issue he has left, and to try to denigrate Senator Obama is part of the information environment to smear and lie about Senator Obama because it's the only hope they have. So what I like to do is I like to play those sound clips side by side, and you can listen to John McCain tell a big fat lie
mm-hmm.
about what Senator Obama said, and then I play the clip from Senator Obama saying, now what part of this doesn't he understand? And it's frustrating to me that the New York Times has fallen into this Judith Miller kind of reporting.
Yeah, it's very frustrating. And in television, you know, there's no context. There's, you know, not a lot of this lingo that's used. It's just flatly asserted that the surge has worked. Everybody knows it, and Obama won't admit it, so there's something wrong with him.
And the counterattack must be, well, John, we're losing in Afghanistan. It's your fault. You sat on the Armed Services Committee. You had 2 years worth of hearings. You've never been made it to a hearing. We are short troops. There is no, you know, strategy, real strategy for winning in Afghanistan. That's where the fight is. And you've completely fallen into this trap that this unnecessary occupation of attacking a country that did us no harm is more important than Afghanistan. And this is the next thing, Peter, you're going to hear. Well, the surge in Iraq chased al-Qaeda back to Afghanistan, and that's why we've seen a resurgence of violence. It has nothing to do with the incompetence of our strategy, the incompetence of the Karzai government, the inability to control massive amounts of heel and tail with this little scrap of troops we have doing the best job they can with nothing. It's the
come on, Scott, get on board. We're fighting them over there so that we don't have to fight them over there.
Yeah. It is.
It depends on the meaning of there.
It is the FDR strategy of concentrating on Europe and leaving the Pacific theater to sort of muddle through with what they can get. The problem is George Bush ain't FDR, and it's not the same thing.
All right, let's talk to Renee, calling from McKinleyville and listening on KGOE in Eureka. Hello, Renee.
Hello, Peter. Hello, Scott. Listen, I get so angry when I watch television, which I don't watch it much anymore, or when the New York Times doesn't report the way I think they should report. But isn't it true that the Defense Department and the government changed the definition of violence at the beginning of the surge?
That's true. No, that's true. Remember, Peter?
Remind me.
Well, if you got shot in the back of the head, they were criminal assassins, and if you got shot in the front of the head, then it was, sectarian violence.
Yeah, I'm glad you reminded us of that, Renee, because the other thing that occurred about the same time was a big crackdown on media coverage of violent events.
Right,
and both Iraqi television and what's left of the American network correspondents over there, their coverage was sharply curtailed by that.
Right. Well, I really believe that if we were using the correct definition of violence, that the surge probably isn't working.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
I really am so tired of hearing John McCain bring that up and have nobody say anything whatsoever.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, and don't you wish you could talk back to your TV set and they'd actually hear you?
Oh, yes, I wish they could hear me.
Thank you, Renee. Now to Dave in Eureka. Hi, Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. They market this surge as though it was some brilliant new strategy. Reality, it is nothing but more of the same. So in a few more brigades to help protect stealing their oil assets. That's all it's about. And, it's ridiculous to try to pretend that it's anything more than that.
Well, Dave, you're right on. It's a media charade, and the media has brought it to us hook, line, and sinker, and too many Americans are buying into it.
Well, we've got to keep mentioning the reality here to them.
Well, we'll do our part, and you spread the word there in Eureka, Dave. Thank you very much. Scott, anything else you want to add on this?
Well, the surge is a tactical reinforcement. It was never a strategy. They keep calling it a strategy. It's tactics. They've never defined how it was a strategy, how it was going to change the national picture. They don't have any kind of benchmarks. The goalposts have all been either run over or moved, so we don't really know what defines victory. And so, Peter, you and I have made the case last year they should just declare victory and go home, and I think that's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
If you just say, we're winning, we've won, it's time to go, the fact that the Iraqis want a timetable, al-Sistani wants a timetable, he pulled the plug on the SOFA agreement, he is the power in Iraq, and, the guy, John McCain, is living in a fantasy world if he thinks he's dealing with the prime minister or the president or anybody else when it comes to real power in Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Scott, just before we go to a break, I wanted to mention this. The New York Times on Thursday has an editorial critical of the Air Force because they are diverting $16 million in money for counterterrorism to pay for luxury skyboxes. These are little pods with all the creature comforts that get inserted into, a cargo jet or some other big jet, and they're essentially skyboxes for the generals. And, I don't really begrudge the generals traveling, say, first class, but this takes it too far, and the money is coming out of counterterrorism funds. So fighting terror requires that our generals be as comfortable as humanly possible. Is that it?
Peter, they have taken a real switch in the last, since the Bush administration, where they fancy themselves CEOs and not employees of the American taxpayer. This is a real disturbing trend for me, where they have been flying first class, but they fly in civilian clothes. So you don't really know you're sitting next to a tax-paid servant, basically. And to have a military guy, like a general, fly. When I fly Space A on aircraft, I sit in the web cargo seats, and when it gets up to altitude, everybody lies down on the floor with their pillow and blankets they've packed and go to sleep. Now, why these guys think they deserve anything better, it is a testament to ego and what I call this giant blowheartedness that these guys, it's an infection, and somebody with some adult in the Department of Defense needs to smack these guys very hard. It sends the wrong signal. It's the wrong message to our troops. They have Air Force guys serving in Afghanistan and in Iraq, and these guys are flying around in these, and you know, they're just, what they do is they clamp them to the floor and they treat it like cargo, but inside are these big leather seats and this plush, and they probably have flat screen TVs and all that crap. And it is just that. It has crap. It has no business in any combat aircraft or cargo plane anywhere. And what makes it worse, Peter? They all have jets. They can fly in DC-9s and Gulfstreams and all that stuff. They have access to these jets. There's no reason to spend one dime for this kind of tomfoolery.
We're going
to
take a break and return with Scott Dick. He tells it like it is, wouldn't you say? I'm Peter B. Collins.
Good afternoon. Checking traffic on KRXA. Not a whole lot to tell you about right now. The remnants of an older crash in Morgan Hill, South 101, after Tenant Avenue. We had a motorcycle down initially in the middle lanes. That and two other cars cleared off to the side now with minor injuries. Emergency crews still out there, and it looks like they're waiting for a couple of tow trucks to arrive. Salinas, San John Road at 183. We have an injury crash. A minivan skidded off the roadway. CHP on the scene. Possible slow traffic as you go past the scene. South 101 on the Oak Avenue off-ramp down in the King City area, we have reports of a couple of people off to the side of that ramp possibly having a fight. That's creating somewhat of a scene, so traffic possibly slowing as you go past there. Northbound 25 before 146, San Benito County. This is out in Piscines. Watch out for a couple of large tree branches in the northbound lane. This is brought to you by Carfax. Do you know if the airbags in that used car you're buying work? Step one to finding out. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. I'm Nate with traffic on KRXA.
Tired of living with pain, depression, or anxiety? Optimal Health Acupuncture at 132 Carmelito Avenue in Monterey is your ticket to a fresh, rejuvenated lifestyle. Licensed acupuncturist Glenn Sadowski will give you your life back. Just listen to the actual words of one of Glenn's patients.
For over 7 months, Glenn Sadowski has been treating me for asthma diagnosed in 2001 after years of steroidal treatments and many other medications which caused me to gain over 50 pounds. I wanted my life and health back. A close friend told me of Glenn Sadowski's successful treatment for asthma patients. Since January, I have experienced a remarkably positive change in my life due to Glenn's holistic healthcare approach, which includes acupuncture, herbal supplements, as well as dietary and exercise changes. I have jettisoned virtually all of my meds, as well as the unwanted 50 pounds. Glenn Sadowski and Optimal Health have given me back my life.
I'm Glenn Sadowski, and I can help you reclaim your life, too. Call me at 831-655-3208 or on the web at optimalhealthmonterey.com. What are you waiting for?
The staff and management of Natura Vita welcome all to the new Natura Vita store and restaurant at 650 East Laurel Drive in North Salinas. Learn firsthand about traditional and modern natural health products and practices while enjoying delicious and healthy food in a fun, clean, and family-friendly atmosphere. Smoothies, anyone? Come to the new Natura Vita store and restaurant, conveniently located at 650 East Laurel Drive in North Salinas.
Fryer Tuck's Restaurant in Carmel, corner of 5th and Dolores and next to the post office, serves outstanding breakfast and lunch from 7 a.m. Get a full 20% off coupon at FryerTucksRestaurant.com. Come in early for the largest breakfast served in Carmel. Stay late and enjoy the best root beer float I ever had. Thank you, Fryer Tuck's, for 30 years of family enjoyment. Fryer Tuck's, great food, great fun.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. A little musical help from Aretha Franklin. We continue with Scott Dick, our regular contributor on military and veterans issues. Hey, Scott, do you think we'll live to see the day when gays can serve openly in the U.S. military?
I hope so, because it's so ridiculous. Right now, Congress is debating the repealing the Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I wanted to bring out, Peter, that there's an organization called the Center for Military Readiness. Do not be fooled by something called, so inappropriately called, the Center for Military Readiness. It has nothing to do with military readiness. It's about keeping women and gays out of the military.
Oh, is this a Fred Phelps operation?
Almost. Elaine Donnelly is the the president, and it is they're against the using the military as a social experimental program. You know, it's a single issue. They want women restricted, very restricted, about where they can serve and what they can do. And, of course, homosexuals for them is a button. They're very religiously oriented, and it's just don't be confused. Congress is trying to get to the bottom of this, and when you listen to what Donnelly says, she says, repealing the ban on military service by openly gay people would create a sexualized atmosphere, result in forced cohabitation, and punish straight service members who don't want to be exposed to the gay lifestyle.
Hmm.
What forced cohabitation? Ever lived in a barracks with 27 other guys? Or in a tent with 50 other guys? 24/7, you know, night shift on, day shift. You know, this is so ridiculous. It's full of conservative people that serve on the board. And,
yeah.
You know, I think Phyllis Schlafly is an advisor and serves on the board. So, you know, right then you could tell where it's coming from.
Gosh, I thought Phyllis Schlafly was vanquished when I debated her in 1975 on the Equal Rights Amendment. And I obliterated her, but she never went away.
No, she's still out there twitching. And this is the issue. They want to punish women, and gays have been in the military our entire nation's history. If this normal population, 10% of the military, whatever the population is gay. They've served with distinction. They've made it to general, et cetera, et cetera. This whole is much to do about restricting civil rights more than anything else, and they're just using this other stuff as a smokescreen. I just wanted to bring that up.
Okay, and I'm not going to bring up unit cohesion because I don't have time. I wanted to ask you, because you served in Bosnia in the 90s, about the capture of Radovan Karadzic. We're going to talk about his story with Pam Singh from Human Rights Watch just after the top of the hour.
I did a little dance, and it's too bad that the War Crimes Tribunal doesn't have the death penalty. I think he should be swinging from a noose. The guy was a psychiatrist who used his powers of persuasion and psychology to turn neighbor against neighbor, and they used rape as a tool.
Yeah.
Because in those rural society and almost the whole country's rural, especially in the Muslim, they know that once a woman is raped, she's untouchable, and they were concerned about the birth rate.
Mm-hmm.
It was they used mass murder, and you know, and he was a big man on campus until his money ran out.
Yeah,
we began to excavate the mass graves of Srebrenica. We found several mass graves in our area, the MND North. Multinational Division North,
mm-hmm.
And this guy was amazing. I saw a documentary from German TV, because we'd have never seen an American TV, where the Serbs, of course, while they were killing people, took video, and the Germans got a hold of it and put it into a documentary. And the commentary from some of the witnesses who were actual Serb soldiers said that there was so much blood on the road. Cars were sliding off the road. Mm. They would kill people. They'd roll them off. They would find people in their gardens dead, and they actually forced neighbors to go around with hand trucks every morning to pick up dead bodies. It is something from the 40s. It's something from a bad movie, except it was the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really unthinkable. And, you know, I wrestled with the issues of Clinton's war powers and the use of NATO bombers on Bosnia. But Europe had failed to act, and it really did default to the United States. And in retrospect, I have to say that I support our efforts. I think they were probably just a little too late, and that, you know, we attempted to set a standard for human rights in Bosnia and Kosovo that would have served us well had the Bush administration tried to, you know, build on that.
Yeah, we didn't use any bombers in Bosnia. That was in Kosovo.
Okay.
A correction.
Thank you.
We didn't help negotiate the Dayton, and it was very stringent, and they all agreed to it. And we went in, and the Bosnian Serbs tried to, you know, restrict our ability to move, but we had freedom of movement, and so that's why we could uncover in the Bosnian Serbs. They're trying to carve out a region and then become a greater Serbia. It had to do a lot with psychology and nationalism and outright cruelty and inhumanity. and become millionaires. Mm-hmm. Don't forget the money component of this.
Yeah. Well, Scott, thank you very much. We'll talk more about Karajic coming up after the top of the hour with Pam Singh from Human Rights Watch. Scott, thank you. We'll talk to you next week.
You're welcome, Peter. Anytime.
Visit his website, scottdickshow.com. Find out more about who he is. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Joshua Emerson Smith is on duty today taking your calls. And lines will be open next hour in the Free Speech Zone, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company, which offers more than 60 different wines made with certified organic grapes. Veronique, French wines are intimidating for some American consumers. Mm-hmm. How do you help break it down for us?
Don't be intimidated. What is there to be intimidated about? There's nothing too exotic about them. You either like them or you don't like them. You know, it's really simple. You either like Van Gogh or you don't. You either like the Beatles or you don't. You know, wines are really a form of a vibration in a bottle, just like poetry, just like music. And you know the style of music that you like. So maybe you're going to love French wines. And then go for it.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE toll-free. That's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. A crowd estimated at 200,000 turned out in Berlin to hear U.S. presidential candidate Barack Obama talk about the shared history of the United States and Germany.
We are a people of improbable hope, with an eye towards the future, with resolve in our heart. Let us remember this history and answer our destiny and remake the world once again. Thank you, Berlin. God bless you.
Reporter Peter Bild, who was in the Tiergarten Park, says the audience was enthusiastic but subdued.
It was not madly keen. It was quiet. It was a thoughtful speech, and it was not something with rip-roaring cadences or highly memorable phrases that is going to stir the blood.
John McCain also went German today, visiting a German restaurant in Columbus, Ohio, where he said Obama is wrong about Iraq.
It is very clear that Senator Obama took the far-left position. It's very clear that Senator Obama does not understand what's at stake here, what was at stake in Iraq, and his refusal to acknowledge that the surge has succeeded.
McCain said he'd like to give a speech in Germany as president. In Phoenix, the campus of South Mountain Community College is in lockdown. Police say a gunman opened fire there, wounding three people. They have the shooter in custody. In Utah, last August, coal mine operator Bob Murray held out hope that six trapped miners would be okay.
The roof is there, and that makes me somewhat optimistic that we'll find these men alive down there.
He was wrong. The men were entombed. Their bodies will never be recovered, and three others died trying to rescue them. Now, federal regulators say Murray was also wrong when he said the underground collapse had been caused by an earthquake.
It was a catastrophic outburst of the coal pillars that were used to support the ground above the coal seam.
Richard Stickler of the Mine Safety and Health Administration says the coal pillars had been weakened. He says Murray Energy should have known it needed stronger supports, but did nothing. The company's been fined $1.6 million. Dolly, still dumping heavy rain in South Texas, has weakened to a tropical depression, but for thousands of people, where hurricane-force wind toppled trees and cut power, CBS News correspondent Hari Srinivasan says it will be a while before they can go home.
A lot of people in these rural and smaller areas, they have family, they have friends that they can stay with. But in areas around Brownsville, Harlingen, San Benito, yeah, there were quite a few people forced to use shelters.
Severe storms tore across New Hampshire today. Governor John Lynch says at least 100 homes were damaged.
Residents who've lived here for 30 years tell me they've never seen anything like this in their lives.
One person was killed in Epsom. Bad day on Wall Street. The Dow Industrial's down 283 points to 11,349. The price of oil rose a dollar and a quarter. This is CBS News.
It's summer and family vacation time is upon us. So before you hit the road, make sure your car is ready at the Sears Summer Travel Sale. Right now at the Sears Auto Center, buy three of our best-selling Bridgestone tires and get the fourth free. Come to Sears for everything to get your family and car geared up. Get your car serviced 7 days a week, including nights, and shop while you wait. So come into the Sears Auto Center now and get ready to live like it's summer. Sears.
Restrictions and exclusions apply. Offer on Bridgestone Metaforce Plus, HP 515, dual APT, three tires only. See store for details. Offer valid 76 to 731-08.
All right, so you want to install carpet in how many rooms?
All of them.
Ouch, that hurts.
No, see, it's only $199. Feeling better?
Yeah.
It's time to save big on carpet installation. Right now at the Home Depot, basic installation is just $199. That's any carpet style, all at our everyday low prices, and any number of rooms. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only. See store for details, exclusions, and license numbers.
A new study says combinations of drugs are helping to extend the lives of people infected with the AIDS virus. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports.
Since the introduction of combination treatments 12 years ago, life expectancy for HIV patients has jumped markedly. Then it was only about 36 years.
The average life expectancy has increased now to around 49 years.
Still far below that of North Americans and Europeans without the illness, says British Columbia AIDS researcher Robert Hogg, but a significant improvement just the same. It's important to note this analysis in the journal Lancet covers higher income countries. These gains are not being seen throughout Africa, for instance. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Late today, the House voted overwhelmingly to fund a large expansion of a program to fight AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria in Africa and elsewhere. The measure, already passed by the Senate, authorizes $48 billion over 5 years. President Bush is expected to sign it. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
The contagious virus that causes warts can be spread by contact.
Dude, where you been?
Hey!
And it can happen in an instant. Want to stop warts just as fast?
W!
Fast-acting Compound W Freeze-Off. Unlike liquid wart removers that can take time to work, Compound W Freeze-Off's deep penetrating action works to destroy the wart in as little as one application. And that's why the W is the one moms trust. W! Fast-acting Compound W. The wart stops here. Use as directed.
It's time to get more for less. Because right now at the Home Depot end of season clearance event, you can save 25% or more on select items throughout the store. Everything from cordless power tools, hand tools, wet dry vacs, and more. All from your favorite brands like Ridgid, Ryobi, and DeWalt. Just look for the yellow tags and save. At the Home Depot end of season clearance event, the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid in U.S. only while supplies last. See store for details.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
For 13, almost 14 years, Radovan Karadzic defied the world, defied the law. And this week, the law won. Radovan Karadzic was the big man with the wild hair, the Bosnian Serb leader who presided over the ethnic cleansing that led to many war crimes. He is accused of genocide and will be dispatched to The Hague to face a trial there over the next few years. To talk about this amazing story, Pam Singh joins us. She's counsel at the International Justice Program of Human Rights Watch, and their website is hrw.org. Pam, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So there's been a lot of coverage of this, and it has been fascinating to see how Karadzic was essentially hiding in plain sight in Belgrade, and that he got away with this for a long, long time. And one of the suggestions is that he had protection at high levels of the government, and that recently that protection evaporated. What did occur there that permitted the apprehension of this war criminal?
Well, I mean, it's speculation at this point. I mean, it's certainly true that he had some protection from authorities in Serbian intelligence. In terms of why now, why was he arrested now, as you said, after having, you know, hiding in plain sight for, you know, over a decade? You know, I think some of that can be attributed to the new government in Serbia. There was a new government that came into power in May of this year,
mm-hmm.
and they are definitely focused on joining the European Union. And the European Union has been very firm in maintaining the condition that if you want to join Serbia, if you want to join the European Union, you have to show us your commitment to justice and human rights, and that includes, you know, handing over war crimes fugitives to the Yugoslav Tribunal in The Hague.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that this new Serbian government did it freely, or do they feel that they'll pay a price? Because there's certainly a lot of ethnic cleansing supporters that remain in Serbia. It's still a very deeply divided nation.
It is divided. It's true that there are certainly hardliners that oppose the arrest of Karadzic and oppose, you know, his extradition to The Hague in the event that, you know, his appeal goes forward, which it likely will. But at the same time, I think that the government has tapped into, you know, what they feel is the overwhelming public sentiment, which is, you know, Serbia wants to move on and break from the past. And certainly this move is, you know, certainly a good step in that direction,
mm-hmm.
and moving towards the European Union as opposed to embracing nationalism, which at the end of the day is empty.
Right. And in addition to the pressure put on by the EU, were there any, you know, independent bounty hunters or investigators who were out there looking for Karadzic?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. I think from what I understand, you know, various intelligence agencies from various countries have been working to help the Serb authorities track him down. Also, the U.S. government had put a bounty on his arrest of $5 million as for both Karadzic and Ratko Mladic, who is
mm-hmm.
still at large.
Right. And do we imagine that Mladic has grown his hair long and is some kind of a new age guru in Belgrade?
I'm not sure there could be two of them. But I think that, you know, moving forward, it certainly shows, you know, this arrest of Karadzic, who, you know, unlike Mladic, where, you know, the ICTY prosecutors, both the current and previous prosecutors, had always firmly insisted that Mladic was in Serbia or was within Serbia's reach, they couldn't say the same thing for Karadzic. And the fact that the Serbian authorities were able to arrest him so easily, I think that's really raised the bar. And certainly the European Union is, you know, it's up to them now to look to Serbia and say, well, look, you were able to arrest Karadzic pretty easily. You know, where's Mladic,
mm-hmm.
the other architect of the Srebrenica genocide?
Now, the third, really, of the three evildoers who presided over this ugly era as Yugoslavia broke up, Milosevic, Slobodan Milosevic, died before his trial concluded in The Hague. And as you just pointed out, Ratko Mladic, he was the general who presided over a lot of the brutal acts and the acts of genocide. What is your sense of what will happen going forward here? Because Karadzic is saying that, like Milosevic, he wants to represent himself at the World Court.
Well, I mean, the right to self-representation, it's a right that's enshrined in the International Covenant of Civil and Political Rights. But it's not an unqualified right, and it'll be up to the judges to decide whether or not the conditions exist for Karadzic to be able to defend himself in court. And certainly from the Milosevic trial, I mean, you know, the judges are, I think, much more familiar with what it means to deal with a defendant who uses the opportunity of self-representation to engage in long political diatribes in the courtroom, really to deliver a political message to the people in Serbia. And that was, you know, it made the proceedings very lengthy and, you know, sidetracked the court from its main goal, which was making a determination on his guilt or innocence. I think moving from that experience and, you know, the untimely death of Milosevic and what a tragedy it was for his victims, the court will really work to make sure that if indeed he is granted the right to represent himself, it's, you know, reined in sufficiently to make sure that it doesn't disrupt proceedings.
Mm-hmm. And, Pam, from your point of view, what is the current state of Serbian nationalism? I'm trying to come up with the right term, because it doesn't appear to be in total remission, but it does appear that the new leaders have been able to hold back the most virulent elements.
Well, I think it sort of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. I mean, in terms of Serbian nationalism, it's unrealistic to expect that it will ever be completely, eradicated.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, the new government, ironically, it's a coalition between, part of the government has always been sort of pro-Western, European Union. And it's a coalition between, Boris Tadic and Milosevic's old socialist party. I think they're eager to make a break from the past and really move forward towards the European Union. And again, that's why European Union pressure has been so important in realizing Tadic's arrest and will be important moving forward to make sure Mladic also winds up in The Hague to stand trial.
And Pam, if you could, you're better informed than I am. I recall that when this new government, the Tadic government, took over, there were some controversies over the direction of the government and its relations with Croatia and with Kosovo. Can you refresh my memory on that?
Well, the biggest problem, I think, the biggest obstacle is certainly that having to do with Kosovo, because the new government, although it has a much more pro-Western bent, is still opposed to Kosovo's independence. Now, that being said, I believe this week, or certainly within the last 10 days, the government has said when Kosovo announced its independence and it was recognized by a number of states, Belgrade quickly retracted a number of their ambassadors and recalled their ambassadors from a number of countries, including the United States and also the European Union. And within the last 10 days, there's been a partial, they've turned back on that decision,
mm-hmm.
in that the European Union ambassadors are being reinstated. So, I think that's a positive move, but they're still insisting that they'll never recognize Kosovo independence.
Mm-hmm.
So time will tell how constructive that debate will be.
And the U.S. rather quickly embraced Kosovo's declaration, did it not?
It did. I mean, and that's indicative of the U.S.'s role in terms of the NATO action in the war in 1999 and its, strong support of human rights in Kosovo.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And certainly having lived in Kosovo, I can tell you there's a Bill Clinton Boulevard. They certainly love the Americans in Kosovo.
And when did you live there?
I lived there 2003 and 2004.
Really? And what was that like?
It was very interesting. It's interesting to see a society trying to rebuild after war and trying to establish. I mean, at that time, of course, independence hadn't been declared, but, really trying to grapple with what it meant, to be a state, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And were you working there as an observer, or did you go to school? What was your role?
I was working with the United Nations mission in Kosovo.
Uh-huh.
So I was working on justice-related issues there.
Okay. And what are the lingering disputes, regarding property, regarding civil rights? With this Declaration of Independence, is Kosovo really able to manage its own affairs, or is there still a dependence economically on Serbia?
I think there's certainly a dependence economically on the international community. In terms of its relationship with Serbia, it's very delicate right now, so it's hard to speculate what will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And just in terms of, respect for rights, that's the challenge moving forward and certainly what the international community wants to cultivate, which is, respect for minority rights, particularly Serb rights, all of the responsibilities of statehood in addition to the advantages of it.
Mm-hmm. And what are the tensions like in Kosovo between the, as I recall, it's the ethnic Albanians who are primarily Muslim, and those who are from other cultures who basically were moved in there during the Yugoslav reign?
There's going to be tension between the ethnic Albanians and the Serbs that live in Kosovo. But, moving forward, I think, again, the challenge is going to be to make sure that those minority rights are adequately protected and that they can coexist
All right, we're going to take a break and return with Pam Singh from Human Rights Watch. She is counsel at their International Justice Program. If you have a question or comment about Serbia, Kosovo, about the arrest of Radovan Karadzic, feel free to give us a call, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And if you want to help me with my Serbian pronunciation because you're a native speaker, give me a call. I can use the help. It's 888-573-8372. Thanks for listening today on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Checking traffic on KRXA. We'll start you off in Monterey, northbound Highway 1 after Munras Avenue. Two-car fender bender off to the right-hand shoulder. No injuries, and CHP is on the way. Gilroy South 101 near Castro Valley Road. An accident vehicle went off the roadway and smacked the concrete divider. Looks like that's in the final clearing stages. Tow truck should be on the scene at this point, working to clear that up. North 101 before Highway 25. Getting reports of somebody walking a little too close to the roadway. CHP is on the way to escort them out of there. And out in Piscinas, Highway 25 northbound before 146. Looks like we may still have some large tree branches in the northbound lane, so drive with caution there. This report brought to you by Carfax. Do you know what happens to flood-damaged cars when they're pulled from the water? Many are dried out, cleaned up, and resold. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. If you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
We'll be right back. the Peter B. Collins Show. We're heading into the free speech zone. Your calls and comments are welcome. Lines open at 888-5, Peter B., 888-573-8372. We continue with Pam Singh, counsel in the International Justice Program at Human Rights Watch. We're talking about the stunning arrest of Radovan Karadzic in Belgrade this week. He was hiding in plain sight. Had adopted a different name, a different look, a different woman, and it worked. He even went to one of his favorite bars on a regular basis where they featured photographs of him when he was the leader of the Serbian government and the ugly events from 1992 to 1995. And Pam, help me with the pronunciation. Karadzic is how it would be pronounced phonetically, but the Serbs would say...
Karadzic. Yeah.
All right. Do we roll that R?
Well, I do. I'm not sure if that's the proper pronunciation.
So like car in a ditch. Karadzic.
There you go.
Okay, great. And it's a little grisly, but if you wouldn't mind, could you recap for our listeners what he is accused of and what he is likely to be tried for in terms of war crimes in The Hague?
Well, I mean, most notably, he's charged with genocide, and that's in relation to two, there are two bases for that. One is the 44-month siege of Sarajevo, which basically, you know, the UN and the indictment against him basically says that he was involved in inflicting terror on persons living within Sarajevo. And that included, you know, there were snipers in the hills of Sarajevo. I don't know if you've ever been to Sarajevo, but there are hills, you know, that leads into a valley. And basically the snipers were perched in the hills and shooting indiscriminately at civilians, including children.
I recall that, yeah.
And in addition to that, he's considered one of the main architects of the Srebrenica massacre. And that was basically, that resulted in the slaughter of almost 8,000 Muslim men and boys, simply because, you know, they were Bosnian.
Right, yeah. And he doesn't really deny that these events occurred. He simply claims that he's the true patriot and that these are all justifiable acts. Is that a fair characterization?
I mean, I think generally for these kinds of crimes, it's a good defense strategy to say, you know, to not dispute that the acts actually occurred, but rather to dispute...
the motive.
The role, and role in it, which, you know, that'll likely be part of his defense strategy.
And is, in your view, is it necessary to apprehend Ratko Mladic as well to establish the case against Karadzic?
I mean, I think it's absolutely essential to apprehend Ratko Mladic. I mean, I think certainly for the victims of Srebrenica and, you know, the victims of Sarajevo and the victims of the Bosnian War, I mean, he was one of the key inflictors of terror on them. You know, he, together with Karadzic, established these concentration camps, you know, concentration camps that haven't been on European soil since the Second World War.
Yeah.
He's responsible for the worst atrocity that occurred since the war. And so, I mean, his apprehension and trial is essential for the victims and, you know, and for the credibility of the tribunal.
And Pam, from your perspective, as you look back on the actions that were taken by the U.S. and NATO to respond to these events in the former Yugoslavia back in the 90s under the Clinton administration, do you believe the U.S. acted properly and morally?
Well, I mean, we don't take a position on whether or not military action is justifiable or not, but rather we just focus, Human Rights Watch focuses on the consequences of military intervention. And, you know, to the extent that war crimes, crimes against humanity and genocide were committed, then they should be tried.
But the response by the U.S., I mean, I have mixed feelings about it because on the one hand, I recognize that we were observing genocide, and for the most part, Europe was unwilling to take any action to try to curb the activities of the Serbs. And at the same time, the aerial bombing that we conducted and some of the other methods that we used, you know, were questionable in some respects. So I'm wrestling with it myself, and I'm just curious, as you look back at it now, how you evaluate it.
I mean, you know, as I said, it's, you know, we don't take a position on whether or not, you know, military intervention is justifiable. I mean, but what we focus on, rather, is, you know, what kinds of crimes were committed during the war. And during the war, you know, people like Ratko Mladic and Radovan Karadzic committed genocide, and that's something that needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, it will be, at least in Radovan Karadzic's case.
Okay. And I've got about 40 seconds. Anything I haven't asked you about that you'd like to add here, particularly related to Karadzic?
No, simply that, you know, this is a great day for, his arrest was a great day and for victims of, you know, the thousands of victims of his crimes, and also a great day for international justice because it just shows that no one is beyond the reach of the law.
Well, and we hope that's a model that might apply to certain American leaders in the future. Pam, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Pam Singh, as we mentioned, she's counsel in the International Justice Program at Human Rights Watch, and their website is hrw.org. The rest of the hour I've set aside to talk to you. It's the Free Speech Zone right after a break, so if there's something you want to talk about, John McCain's memory problems, the almost impeachment hearing that'll occur in Washington tomorrow, anything else that's on your mind, including Obama's big speech in Berlin, give me a call. Toll free, it's 888-5-PETER-B. Lines are open for you now at 888-573-8372. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we'd like to personally invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Try one of our signature pizzas or calzones, such as Jamaican Me Crazy or Wild Mushroom Dreams.
We also offer sandwiches, salads, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's ice cream.
Located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina. We have been recognized by Monterey County food critics Mike Hill and Melissa Snyder as locals' favorite, best for families, and much more.
Call 582-9149 or visit our website at apizzaparadise.net.
It's A Pizza Paradise, where your pizzas are bigger, better, and bolder.
That's 582-9149.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hello, this is Solazar.
Hi, I'm Caroline.
Join us this Sunday at 6 p.m. for Good Vibrations, Tools for Transformation.
Together, we'll transform your relationships, communication, health, and the ability to reach your goals and dreams.
Good Vibrations, Sunday at 6 p.m. on AM 540 KRXA.
Good vibrations.
Hi,
I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show. Weekdays, 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
This house is rocking, don't bother knocking. This is the song that a geezer puts on when he gets a fresh bottle of Viagra. Over the top rocking from the Brian Setzer Orchestra. Came out of the Stray Cats, if you remember them. It's the Free Speech Zone here on the Peter B. Collins Show. My lines are open to hear from you today at 888-5-PETER-B. I've got rewards for first-time callers. You get your choice of DVDs, Uncounted, about stolen elections, or I've got a film called The Future of Coal. And it's a powerful look at the coal industry, the pollution that comes from burning coal to generate electricity, and the devastation to the environment that occurs when they use mountaintop mining, strip mining, just blow the lid off the mountain and leave a big mess behind. So those are available if you'd like to call the program today, and I'd love to hear from you. It's summertime. People are on vacation. Schedules have shifted, and that's an opportunity for you if you've never called into the show or it's been a while. I'd love to hear from you. 888-573-8372. We talked to Maxine Waters at the top of the show about this impeachment, non-impeachment thing that's going on in Washington on Friday. And I do like to mention some of our listeners hear this program after the fact on a delayed broadcast in San Francisco, Seattle, and Portland. And we are talking about a hearing scheduled for Friday morning in Washington. And Dennis Kucinich has presented an article of impeachment that will be heard. But it's not an impeachment hearing. And as we discussed with Congresswoman Waters, that means that the rules sharply limit the ability of anyone to testify, for example, and say, I think Bush lied. And we talked to Bruce Fine about that, the principled Republican, who will also be presenting, testifying at this committee hearing tomorrow. And he said that he has had to sanitize his testimony to conform with these rules. And that it makes it very difficult for him to deliver the frank and direct comments that we heard from him on this program today. So I think it's going to come up disappointing, but I'm glad that Dennis Kucinich has carried the ball this far. And who knows? I implored Maxine Waters to look for a parliamentary maneuver that could redefine this as an impeachment hearing, and then the rules would change remarkably. So that's on my mind. Anything else you want to talk about, bring it on, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. We go to Cindy in Central Washington State. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter B.
Hi, are you a first-time caller?
No, I'm not, sorry.
Okay.
I'm just striking out here.
Well, it's good to hear from you.
Thank you. I had a question for your guest that just left. I'm so sorry I missed her.
Uh-huh.
But the human rights thing, I'm just wondering how the United States would fare using that same criteria, human rights,
War crimes, torture. Yes.
Yeah, Fallujah, white phosphorus, renditions.
Right.
Would we qualify for a European Union? Not that we'd want to join, but would we qualify? Would we meet those standards?
Well, so far, we have declined to participate in the International Criminal Court.
Yeah.
And it's not clear to me exactly whether we qualify for the World Court in The Hague. So I will leave it to greater legal minds to parse that for us. As we have seen, Vincent Bugliosi, the Manson prosecutor, has published this book about charging Bush with murder.
Right.
He believes that there is a course of action here in the United States that could hold Bush accountable. But I'm not an expert on the international courts, and the only thing I do know clearly is that we didn't sign the International Criminal Court Treaty. And so it's not clear to me how that would impact the treaties that relate to the World Court in The Hague, which I believe are under the auspices of the United Nations. So I beg, somebody who knows more, call me and we'll talk about it and explain that for your benefit, Cindy.
Well, I think just the other day, didn't the news say that England and Canada said that they could no longer trust the United States on its stance on torture because we waterboarded?
I heard that about England. What I heard separately about Canada is that their parliament has called for a new investigation into what happened on 9/11, and that they want to they're pursuing this because 24 Canadians were killed, I believe, all at the World Trade Center.
Wow.
And so they are asking to reopen that and have a full and fair investigation of 9/11.
Wow.
So that's interesting, but I didn't hear Canada weigh in on the torture issue.
Yeah.
Yes, I did hear that about the United Kingdom.
Yeah. Gosh. Okay.
All right, Cindy, thank you very much.
Sure, Peter.
Good
bye.
To hear from you today. 888-5 Peter B. More of your calls in just a moment, but first.
Trash.com.
Reporter R.J. Shulman, who was terminated from 13 different major daily newspapers, doesn't have to report to Sam Zell or any other ugly publisher today because he owns his own press. It's on the web at PTSD1.blogspot.com. R.J. Shulman, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Peter B?
Oh, I'm doing okay today. It's good to talk with you again. And your lead story is about the McCain rejection by the New York Times this week. He wanted to be just like Barack, who got an op-ed published in the Times the week before, and he sent one in, and the Times rejected it. Is this because crayons were involved?
No, actually, this is because the subject matter was not suitable to the Times as far as they were concerned.
All right, and you have unearthed, discovered that the working title for McCain's opinion piece was called "The Blitzkrieg is Working"?
Yeah, that's right. This was sanitized by everybody else who didn't report this, nor did the New York Post print the original copy of what was submitted to the Times by McCain.
Wow, this is amazing. And you quote David Shipley, the opinion page editor at the Times. We thought that was a bit over the top, especially when he said, "Today Iraq, tomorrow the world."
That's really what was in McCain's piece, and that was why it was rejected.
Uh-huh. And McCain responded by saying, "I was shocked and awed by the rejection, and when I am president, I will show the Times that we have ways of convincing them to print certain things as they don't want to be labeled traitors to the fatherland." Wow, that's strong language.
Yeah, it really was. Once again, the corporate media failed to report this.
And you quote David Shipley of the Times saying that they've rejected many editorials, and you even quote Bush, that Bush had a, it says, "They rejecticated my book report on my pet goat." Wow, they said it was 5 years late and had stuff in it that was not in the book, like the goat saying that the surge was working. And besides, they claim I spelled goat wrong. I thought that was a Dan Quayle problem.
Yeah, but anyway, that also didn't make the news on the corporate media, that Bush had his piece rejected as well by the Times.
Now, you scooped again here, RJ. I didn't know that Dick Cheney also had a piece rejected by the Times.
I know, this is so amazing. I can't believe every media outlet should have picked up on this, but of course it was, swept under the rug, along with impeachment and war crimes and everything else we don't hear on the mainstream press.
So Cheney's editorial was, "If I shot my hunting buddy in the face, here's how I did it." Wow. No wonder they didn't publish it. I mean, they had the good taste not to publish an OJ column like that.
Yeah, exactly. That was exactly what Mr. Shipley said. He's had to reject a lot of things lately. So
yeah,
McCain is not not the lone wolf out there, whining away as his former
Phil Graham?
Phil Graham, yeah. I think his name, Phil Graham, is his former economic advisor, said we were all whiners. I haven't seen so much whining from anybody about the press in my life as this whining that McCain and his campaign is doing.
Well, they are having a rough week because Obama has the photo ops from heaven one after another. And McCain was going to go out to the Gulf of Mexico and do a photo op on one of our drilling platforms, but a hurricane got in the way and he had to cancel that. And then he gave this press conference in front of the bologna section at a supermarket in Pennsylvania, and there was bologna in the foreground as well as the background.
Yeah, I know. I don't know who's running his campaign, but I wonder if it's the folks from Mad Magazine, the way it's been going lately.
And so your exclusive is that McCain is planning to announce the end of the world in order to get the media to pay attention to him?
Yeah, right. He's got this new campaign strategy called the "Hey, look over here" strategy, which is, obviously getting the press to look at him. And the way to do it is he's going to have three blockbuster announcements. The first is going to be he's going to announce tomorrow his vice presidential candidate. And after that announcement, he's going to announce who Obama is going to choose. And then after that, he's going to announce the end of the world and exactly when that's going to happen.
Wow. This is stunning. And you're the only one who's reported this so far, RJ.
Yeah, I just don't know why everyone's missing this, Peter B. I'm so glad that your program is there, because without you, it would just be on the blog and on the Post-Times Sun Dispatch, and that would be it. But
right.
Thanks to you, your listeners are privy to some of the material that is absolutely being swept away and ignored by the corporate media.
Well, and I have the perfect compliment here, the soundtrack element for his announcement of the end of the world. It sounds like this.
Time is the last voice that you will ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
So we'll just have to see if they stage it the way you and I would. RJ, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today.
All right. Take care, Peter B. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, great. RJ Shulman, read his work. PTSD, the number one, .blogspot.com. That's the website of the Post-Times Sun-Dispatch. And Mike's on the line from Fair Yokes. Hello, Mike. How are you doing today?
Good, Peter. How are you?
I'm okay. Can you, I know you're an attorney. Can you answer my question about the World Court and the Hague?
I don't have a clue.
Okay. Now, that's a real straightforward answer from a lawyer, Mike. I give you 10 points for that.
I think there's probably a number of courts in this country that should be taking action and aren't, but mm-hmm. That's another subject.
So you called to tell me about Danny Boy Lundgren.
Yes. Actually, I was able to watch two live C-SPAN speeches on the floor, one in the House, Dan Lundgren, another one, Larry Craig, on the Senate side. Dan Lundgren accused the leadership of the House of perpetrating a hoax on the American people, trying to cover up in the debate on the oil bill.
Okay. And this is where the Republicans want to drill, and the Democrats, because they control the House, have been able to use parliamentary methods to prevent the Republicans from amending the bill to include more drilling.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I called Dan Lundgren's office after witnessing that and explained to them that if anyone was perpetrating a hoax, it was definitely Dan Lundgren, that oil is not the solution for our children's future. Bill Durston is running against him.
Mm-hmm.
This guy Lundgren is a point man, and he's going to be there tomorrow. His staff people are saying he will stand firm on the impeachment issue.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kind of person that needs to be taken out of office. Bill Durston is trying to do that.
That's right.
And to the extent that others here in California need to help, I think he would appreciate it.
Indeed. I've talked to Dr. Bill on the program many times, and I have a high regard for him. He'd be a great replacement for Dan Lundgren, and he is a full-throated supporter of impeachment, has been for a year and a half now, maybe longer. And Lundgren is a problem that needs to be taken care of. There's no doubt about it. And I do encourage people, some people may have tuned in since we talked about this earlier, but the non-impeachment hearings before the Judiciary Committee Committee on Friday will be on C-SPAN 3, and it starts at 7 a.m. Pacific time. And as you've just heard, this may be a very short hearing, because I think people like Lundgren will attempt to seize some parliamentary techniques to prevent Democrats or even principled Republicans like Bruce Fein, who was on our program earlier today, from asserting the truth about the wrongdoing of Bush et al.
Speaking about asserting the truth, Larry Craig also, on the Senate side, gave a live speech today, and he was, in effect, trying to convince us that oil was the answer and that the Democrats were responsible for not drilling. And when he was making his point, he used a phrase that I had to chuckle. He said, quote, "They don't want their dirty little tricks revealed."
Well, he also said last week, inartfully, that we will not be jerked around by the gas pump hoses or something like that. I mean, it was a wide stance metaphor for sure.
Well, for both of these representatives in our Congress, carrying the water for George Bush and these oil companies is what they have lowered themselves to, and we've got to get them out of
there. All right, Mike, I agree with you. Thanks for your call today. More calls coming up in a moment. It's the Free Speech Zone. You've got it on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Checking traffic on KRXA. We'll start you off in Monterey, northbound Highway 1 after Munros Avenue. Two-car fender bender off to the right-hand shoulder. No injuries, and CHP's on the way. Gilroy South 101 near Castro Valley Road. An accident vehicle went off the roadway and smacked a concrete divider. Looks like that's in the final clearing stages. Tow truck should be on the scene at this point, working to clear that up. North 101 before Highway 25. Getting reports of somebody walking a little too close to the roadway. CHP's on the way to escort them out of there. And out in Piscines, Highway 25 northbound before 146. Looks like we may still have some large tree branches in the northbound lane, so drive with caution there. This report brought to you by Carfax. Do you know what happens to flood-damaged cars when they're pulled from the water? Many are dried out, cleaned up, and resold. Ask your dealer for a free Carfax vehicle history report or go to Carfax.com. If you spot a traffic problem, give us a call, 415-901-7990. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffeehouse in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rocks on, fueled by the music of the late, great Robert Palmer. stand in the free speech zone? Hey, did you hear China is allowing protests at the Olympics? The nearest free speech zone is 900 miles from the stadium. They took that right out of the Bush Rove playbook. We got Jim in Pennsylvania listening in the Keystone State. Hello, Jim.
Good evening and good afternoon.
Well, thank you. How are you?
On the Bosnian War that went on here, this Serbian, accused of being a war criminal, he's no more of a war criminal than Milosevic was, who was another one that was prosecuted.
So you don't think Milosevic was a war criminal?
No.
Because?
These guys, they're fighting a war for their people. It's a conflict over land, and they're fighting against the Al-Qaeda.
No.
There, elements of Al-Qaeda were helping the Bosnian Islamics.
There were some, yes, Islamic people.
Right, well,
Islamic
that's what
people
was driving their army. They had no defense at all.
Okay, but it wasn't Osama bin Laden. So
no, well,
please, don't.
He wasn't there.
Don't conflate the two.
He wasn't there, but Al-Qaeda is universal.
No.
Al-Qaeda is all over the world. Elements of Al-Qaeda all over the world. Okay, well, that's not the argument. This is what they were fighting against. It was conflict over land. The Christian Serbs against the Islamics, and there were elements of Al-Qaeda there with them. And the Serbs had it won. Until the British and the French are the ones that intervened.
No.
They came in
no,
there
the
as
the British and the French sat on their hands.
What's that?
The British and the French sat idly by while the Serbs were you know, ethnically cleansing and killing people.
The siege of Sarajevo
went on without interruption.
Bosnian Islamics were also doing what? They were also committing war crimes. They also had their methods.
Well, Jim, I don't know of any case where Croats or Kosovars killed people en masse. They did respond to the violence that was perpetrated by the Serbs. It was a war, after all. I understand that.
Right.
But to suggest that they had the power and the ability to round up Serbs and brutalize them, kill them, rape their women, it didn't happen that way, Jim.
Well, yeah, but you're reading the press the way it was written there. That there was a war against both of these sides that used whatever methods they could, and it got graphic. And the Islamic fighters would fight the way they could to win, and they would. You're not hearing that part of it.
But they did not commit the same level of atrocity, Jim. You're rationalizing here.
The British and the French were the peacekeepers, and they were suffering casualties. They were getting shelled from both sides, more so from the Islamic side. They suffered over 100 each, the British and the French. And the reason for it, they wouldn't use their air to defend themselves. So the United States comes in. Okay, here comes the United States, which had no business at all in there. It was nothing to do with the United States security.
I agree with that. I think it was a moral issue, and I think it was partly driven by the fact that we did nothing about Rwanda.
Okay, moral, we are so good here.
Yeah. Hey, Jim. I've heard you, Jim, and I don't have time to hear you out. I want to go to Pete in Carmel. Hello, Pete. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
How are you doing, Peter? How's everything?
I'm okay, thanks.
Good. Very quick. There's been a lot of talk about privatization and like that. And the first time I ever heard of that was people were saying years ago to privatize the mails because private enterprise can do it better and cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, we're hearing about privatization of things now all the time, and I hear the words they can do it better. but I never hear the words cheaper anymore.
Well,
I never hear that. Maybe that's because of Blackwater and Halliburton, you know, guys getting $1,000 a day,
right,
you know, to drive trucks and like that. But
well,
they're
definitely not doing it cheaper, and they're not doing it better. Just one example, KBR, the Halliburton subsidiary with all those contracts in Iraq, has built facilities that cause electric shocks, including electrocution, for troops when they take a shower or use these facilities in other ways. And that's just one example. Thank you, Pete. Got time for one more. It's Caroline and Salinas. Thanks for calling, Caroline.
Hi. I wanted to say that I'm not able to attend the Madison, Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, then I'll pass your scholarship on to the next person who asks for it. I've still got two or three remaining. Just email Peter at peterbcollins.com. You do have to get yourself to Madison, though, because I don't...
Yeah, I want to say that the Amtrak rides from California are completely sold out.
Are they? Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, and plane fare is about $600, so it is a problem. Thank you, Caroline.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Yep, good to talk to you. And thanks for all your calls today. We didn't get to everybody. Next time you hear the Free Speech Zone, call promptly, and we'll get right to you, okay? I'm Peter B. Collins. We'll be back at you tomorrow, same time, same great radio station.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds if we're together?
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The owner of the Utah coal mine that suffered a deadly collapse last summer gets much of the blame. Murray Energy boss Bob Murray insisted the cause was an earthquake, but Richard Stickler of the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration says the pillars of coal left to support the chambers had been compromised.
These pillars failed under excessive load and ejected coal very violently and filled up the most of the tunnels or entries in the affected area.
Six miners were trapped. Their bodies never recovered. Three men died in a failed attempt to rescue them. Stickler says investigators found multiple violations.
As a result of these violations, MSHA has issued mine operator fines totaling $1.6 million.
Murray Energy says it's preparing a response. Gunfire this afternoon at South Mountain Community College in Phoenix. Melody Burkett of CBS radio affiliate KFYI rushed to the scene.
One of the witnesses I talked to says that two men entered the computer lab and began fighting, and they just thought they were playing around. They didn't think it was anything serious, and then all of a sudden, one just started firing, and they heard several shots, and before they knew it, three victims had been shot, and then the gunman just walked out of the room.
He was captured at a house nearby. Of the three people wounded, two are in critical condition. Barack Obama stood on the world stage today.
People of Berlin, people of the world, this is our moment. This is our time.
He spoke in Berlin to a crowd of about 200,000 while John McCain visited a German restaurant in Columbus, Ohio.
I'd love to give a speech in Germany to a political speech or a speech that maybe the German people would be interested in, but I'd much prefer to do it as President of the United States.
After some good gains, the stock market fell backwards today. The Dow lost 283 points to close at 11,349. CBS News business reporter Alexis Christophorus.
It continues to be the same old problems haunting the stock market. Particularly the financial stocks really took a beating today after someone who owns a bond fund said that the bank stocks could actually be exposed.